Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 95 of the Savage and Karate Sports Podcast. The road to 100 gets a little bit closer at this one here tonight on a Wednesday night, as usual, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The Daniel Equale episode, Derek Rivers, Chris Long, Chandler Jones, most notably, unless you're a big Tully Bantikane or Roosevelt Colvin fan. You know, I remember Roosevelt Colvin. I'm not going to lie, I kind of forgot he existed for a long time, though, until I looked at the jersey numbers. The Patriots are the only ones that have anybody that has worn number 95 in Boston sports, so it's a fun factoid for anybody who didn't know. Perhaps, Ryan, what's going on this Wednesday night for you?
Not much. Just still trying to figure out what the hell happened last night with the Celtics after probably the worst quarter they may have ever played in franchise history. I don't think that's too much of an over-exaggeration, because that was just atrocious last night.
I can't say for sure because, you know, not been around the whole franchise.
True, that is true. So maybe I might be wrong there. But, I mean, I'm going out on a limb. I don't think, like I said, too outlandish. Red Sox are winning, so that's good. Bruins, obviously, we'll get to them. And they're too early of an end of their season. But other than that, not doing too bad.
Yeah, it's a lot of mixed emotions right now. There's some excitement with the Patriots with the schedule release.
You know, that too. I didn't even mention that. Yep.
Funeral episode. Just hoping this wasn't going to be it. I don't know if it's the full funeral yet, but it could be close. We don't
doesn't
know.
Doesn't seem like it's off to a great start. There's a lot of like foreboding kind of feeling to Bergeron. And that's what you're getting at. And kind of the future of this team moving forward.
Yeah, it's just like not making me feel very handsome, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. you ever just get that feeling? You know?
Oh, every morning when I wake up and look in the mirror.
Whoa, dude! Don't sell yourself short. Come on now. But, I didn't mean like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, we got to talk about it. We're not gonna just like go into the whole off-season outlook as I'm looking away at the screen, sharing some stuff right now. Mm-hmm. We're not going to go into like all the free agents they go after. Like, we can go through a few, but like, we're going to set the stage and, you know, go along through the off season whenever things pop up, and, you know, not just talk about it all at once because we could go for hours. But before we get to Celtics or Bruins or Patriots, we got moments of the week. My moment of the week, I just picked one this week, was Grant Harmon catching the raccoon at the Arkansas baseball game. This was just like classic, like
wild stuff. Yeah.
If you were to give me a choice of like five states this would happen in, Arkansas would absolutely be one of them. Mm-hmm. I actually don't. Yeah. It wasn't Fayetteville. I don't know how the hell you say it. Just caught the little MF and held it up like a trophy, like mm-hmm. classics stuff you'd see in like the South or whatever you want to call it, Arkansas, what area of the country that's in.
Yep.
I guess there's some indecision on that. I was just there, Arkansas, a few weeks ago, and some people think it's Midwest. Some people think it's South. I don't even know. Why can't we just pick one? This guy had to go to the ER for a rabies shot, obviously. Like, he's holding a raccoon.
Yeah, like, yep.
Like, you know, not how I would do things. You know, if I see a raccoon, I'm just definitely not going to pick it up. But mm-hmm. kind of a rock star move to, like, keep people safe and, like, kind of just, like, bites the bullet for the team, you know.
Absolutely,
bites the bullet for everybody around him. Yep. Nobody has to go get rabies shots. He just, you know, lays his body on the line, takes a hit to make a play. So, gotta respect it. It's a tier four. I would have given it a tier five if he like picked up the raccoon and like slammed it on the ground, not encouraging animal abuse or anything.
Yes.
But like, you know, if he
full blown really Hulk on Loki.
It, if he just... got like really, yeah, if he got really crazy about it, like Hulk on Loki, something crazy like that. That would have been pretty rock star.
Took it and
again,
hummed it.
Not, this is an anti-animal abuse podcast, but...
Mm-hmm. PETA's going to be coming after us now if they're listening.
Yeah, come get some, PETA, honestly. Yep. Like, I have things to talk to you about. But yeah, it was just a crazy move. And like, you know, that's the type of stuff that goes viral so easily, and it did. And, you know, you got to mm-hmm. respect the hustle from Grant Harmon there, a guy who will be remembered, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Arkansas baseball and college baseball lore for quite some time. And just a crazy story.
Yeah,
tier four.
Some would see him as a hero, others would see him maybe as a psycho. For like you said, I definitely, if I saw a raccoon, I would be getting the hell out of the way of that thing. I would not be jumping right in there and grabbing it like he did, but you gotta do what you gotta do, like you said.
Yep, you certainly do. Got to do what you got to do sometimes. Yep. It's just life, baby.
For mine, I went back to the more dickhead side of things. I'm just trying to keep that little segment alive, little piece of that, because I really didn't know what to do. It was kind of a struggle. I was going to maybe touch on Patrick Beverley, just kind of going at the NBA on First Take and everything this entire week, it seems like. But then I woke up and saw this little tidbit from RDT at Barstool, blasting both Aaron Judge and Aaron Boone after the Yankees game last night. Aaron Judge had a chance to have a 3-home run game. He missed it because obviously if you followed baseball this year, the Baltimore Orioles, they changed the dimensions of Camden Yards. I will piggyback off of Aaron Judge and Aaron Boone's kind of comment. I think we've discussed this a little bit off air. It's very weird looking if you've seen Camden Yards now, the little indent, or really the big indent they have out in left field now. You haven't seen pictures of Camden Yards?
No, oh,
I could have sworn we had this discussion. Maybe it was somebody else I was talking with.
Maybe, but I don't remember if that was.
But yeah, this year, because the Orioles have had problems, or they think they've had problems with too many home runs giving up, and they think it's maybe because of their ballpark and not their just terrible pitching over the last half decade. Yeah,
being
exactly shit, not getting like, guys out. But yeah, this year,
like 50 to 60 wins a year.
Like, exactly.
That's going off the dome, but like, it seems about right.
But yeah, for people like you who have not seen it, they decided to, I don't know how many feet back they pushed it. I can't remember off of memory, but yeah, they pushed where the bullpen was. They pushed the wall back a little further. So Aaron Judge, if it was old Camden Yards, would have had a 3-home run game last night. He did not. I think the ball hit off the top of the wall. He ended up with a double. But it was what both Judge and Boone said after the game, which I just found absolutely just the prime example of hypocrites and just bitching and complaining about stupid stuff, typical Yankee stuff. This is from Brian. I think it's pronounced Toke, according to his Twitter, who covers the Yankees. He had these two tweets in the RDT article. This one was Aaron Judge on the new Camden Yards. He said, quote, "It's a travesty, man. I'm pretty upset. It just looks like a create a park now." And then Aaron Boone followed it up with talking about Aaron Judge. He almost had 3 homers, but build your own got him. So, I mean, we've crapped on the Yankee Stadium. Everybody's done it. It's the easiest stadium to crap on in baseball because it is a little league stadium. So to the Yankees to do that, to complain about Camden Yards, like I just found funny. Like, look at the ballpark you playing, and the fact that I'm sorry that the new dimensions of Camden Yards put a damper on your 5-4 win. And you know, they, like I said, won the game. They improved with league best 27-9. Like,
that's the most classic Yankees part about it.
Like, you're winning, you're dominating the league. Pain to say that, like, you just, like, you're nitpicking at this point with this kind of stupid crap.
You've said it before, like, they play in a wiffle ball stadium. Like,
yep,
it's ridiculous. And like,
this is not just my belief. This is the belief across baseball to a lot of people and a lot of fans.
It's just an idiot franchise. I can't wait to see all these storylines and anything else that can come out, no matter how good they do, and then they just won't win the World Series this year. Like,
that's how it usually goes.
They never do. It's just like it since 2009. It's like you could set your watch to it. The Yankees somehow fucking up in some way. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just how it is.
Yep.
Deal with that. But if you don't like it.
I was going to say, like I said, though, like, I'll give them credit where credit's due. They're dominating the league right now. They're, like I said, best record in baseball. They're 5.5 games up already on Tampa Bay in the division. But we're more, they're more so focused on, you know, Aaron Judge missing out on the 3-homer game because the Orioles decided to push their wall back 20 or so feet or whatever it was to try to cut down home runs.
Hit the ball harder or higher.
Exactly. Yeah, you're a big dude. Why don't you power it out? Get back in the weight room. But dude,
I 6'11". Like,
exactly. You should be able to hit
a little harder.
Yep, exactly. It was a hanging, I watched the video. I think it was a hanging breaking ball. Like, you should be able to put that ball out. I have it as a tier 4. Again, not like anything crazy, but I just found it, again, funny. Typical, like, hypocrite statement from Aaron Judge and Aaron Boone. Like, again, just look at the ballpark you playing. A joke, and I'm sure it won't be the first time or it won't be the last time we hear some sort of complaint from either the Yankees or somebody else when it comes to Camden Yards, because like I said, it is dumb looking. Like, I'm waiting for someone to just take off full sprint and kind of hit that extension they have or that little indent in the wall and hurt themselves, because it's not a great looking thing. I get where they're coming from with the create a park thing, but again, like, let's maybe push right field back in Yankee Stadium, and then we'll have a legitimate conversation about this.
Hey, New York Yankees, how would you play Creative Park and make your park less?
Make a real stadium. Yeah. Yep. Like, how about that?
Like, shut up. Yeah. Jeez.
But yeah, just again, was struggling to find some stuff. Found this morning when I woke up and just thought I'd share my thoughts on something completely stupid. So again, tier 4 for me, nothing too crazy.
Yeah. We had a double tier 4 this week. On to Celtics. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on with the Celtics.
Yeah.
Certainly a lot with, you know, of course, starting with Game 7, which we will get to. The Heat series got off to an interesting start, to say the least, on top of that.
Well, I'll put it this way. It got off to a good start. It did not end on any sort of high note or anything. I mean, maybe depending on if you're an optimist, you want to look at that fourth quarter and, you know, again, everybody's talking about the Celtics played in three out of four quarters in that game. I don't know how much I'm putting into it because you still epically lost the third quarter, which was the difference. But we'll start with the positives. I just wanted to kind of wrap up the Bucks series, get maybe some closing thoughts on that. Of course, obviously, Celtics would not be in this position with the Heat if they did not come out and just utterly dominate Game 7 from the tip, a 20-point win, beating the Bucks. I thought this was the first game. I mean, we talked about it throughout the series. It's a struggle trying to contain Giannis and just slow him down in any sense. I thought this was, you know, the Celtics obviously saved their best performance against Giannis for last. I thought he looked gassed in this game towards the end of it and just tired of, you know, trying to get to the basket. Celtics really shut him down in the second half. He had 17 points in the first half on 6 of 10 shooting, got to the line 6 times, had a double-double, 12 rebounds as well, 7 assists. Second half, he scored just 8 points. He was 4-16, didn't hit any threes, and did not get to the free throw line. I thought that was the biggest thing. Looking back on it, the Celtics really were able to clamp down on Giannis, you know, avoid getting him to the free throw line, which is something they struggled with all series, which was going to happen. Like we talked about that, Giannis gets the more favorable calls. The fourth quarter alone, they really kind of asserted their dominance on him. 2 points. He was 1 of 7, couldn't hit layups. He had a couple of bunny shots he missed. So like I said, really great job by the Celtics, you know, Grant Williams, Al Horford. Even Daniel Tice at times didn't look terrible against him in game 7. But just really kind of, I thought Giannis, a little bit of both, you know, great performance for the Celtics all around. And then he looked like a guy who had been beat up for 7 games and just was, I don't want to say wanted to get out of there because obviously I don't think that's the type of performer Giannis is, but like towards the end of the game, you could tell like this guy has had it. He's spent and exactly like as big as a guy as he is.
I think it would have been easier for him and for the team if they had Chris Middleton, but they
didn't. Oh, absolutely. Yep.
You know, Drew Holiday is a great player, but he was forced to take on a bigger role. Brooke Lopez and, you know, anyone else that's an important contributor in by extension. One thing I wanted to ask you real quick, you don't have to have like a huge discussion on this, was the new rule that was added or is going to be added about the fast breaks and just like intentionally fouling, I think is what they're like going for. Like if you intentionally foul someone, like they get the ball and like 2 foul shots. What do you think about that? Cause I like it. I don't know if it's going to be like universally awesome every time it happens, but I like it. I think it's like an interesting change that could, you know, it's going to create more like poster type moments for the league, which is good. And, you know, ratings and, you know, memorabilia, whatever, cool photos and shit like that, whatever, you know, you think of. But what do you think of the rule real quick?
I'm fine with it. I just briefly saw it in passing, so I didn't really get too much into it. But, I mean, I just – quick thoughts. I'd have to assume they're trying to cut down on – because, I mean, we saw it in the Celtics series alone. Like, the amount of free throws that were taken just bogged down the game, slowed things down. You saw a couple of those you know, open court fouls that, again – slows the game down. So maybe I think this is them trying to, or the NBA trying to cut down on that and just keep action going back and forth. And again, like people will exactly more dunks. People are going to like that too, but just the fact like people will complain and rightfully so that the amount of time it takes to review fouls, you know, is this a clear path? Is this a flagrant, all that. It seems like they're trying to cut down on that with this rule change. So that's good for me. And I can only think if it's going to be a positive for the NBA.
Yeah, I agree. But back to the game, you know, it was just nice to see, you know, I think in the first half, the Bucks kept it interesting. And Giannis, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, he had like 10-8-6 after the first quarter, which is crazy.
Yeah, he was like ridiculous. He
almost had a triple-double in the first quarter, which is like unheard of, I feel like. And, you know, it was back and forth. I thought the Celtics, you know, kept pace pretty well. It wasn't perfect, but the second half, they just took over. And
yeah, and I think
that was so huge. You know, having home court definitely helps. You know, you're not always
absolutely get that. Yep.
Be that fortunate against a team like the Bucks, you know, how things have gone the past few years, but they didn't bitch out. And they've had a few games this series where they just don't do that when things, you know, get tough or the pressure's on. And we've gone back to this in the past, like Celtics teams in the past might've.
Yeah.
And this team's just different ever since, you know, that January shift when Jaylen Brown tweeted and everybody really started to get on the same page with Udoka. It's been a different Celtics team, and you can't, like, I never count them out in situations like that. You know, the Heat game, you had some tough moments for the Celtics and, you know, maybe concerned some people, but I'm still not worried about this team, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But it was nice to see them take charge. You know, this isn't like a game where I think, you know, they're the top dog in the East over Milwaukee now or anything. I think it's going to vary year by year with, you know, how the teams are built currently. But, you know, things should change in the offseason, of course. But it's a huge vote of confidence for the Celtics. It's a huge accomplishment, obviously, to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. And it bodes well even after a game one loss to the to the Heat. So I'm in good spirits with the Celtics right now. But, you know, we'll get to more of what's currently going on once we get to the Heat game.
Well, the big thing, too, is you kind of mentioned that just bouncing back from adversity and stuff like that. Like, they had that in game seven, too, with the Tatum getting into foul trouble and another guy stepping up, which was good to see. I mean, Grant Williams obviously had his signature moment with the 27 points and turned into, you know, Grant Curry, as they're calling him, with the seven threes. That was obviously great to see looking back at the series. You know, it seemed like, and I think Jason Tatum was asked about it on the post game, you know, every win the Celtics had, it seemed like somebody had their signature moment or signature game. I guess Jaylen Brown was game two, had 30 points. Obviously game four, Al Horford, the big game for him, 30 points, dunking on Giannis in that game. Jason Tatum had his, arguably some people saying, you know, his kind of coming out party in the playoffs with the 46 point performance on the road in game six.
His David Krejci tribute game, 46 points.
There you go.
Wants Krejci to come back. You know, can't blame him.
And then you have Grant Williams, like I said, 27 in game seven. Even Peyton Pritchard, again, you know, a guy that had he really struggled. And I, you know, just from an eye test, he was bad the first six games of that series. Looking at it stat wise, you know, before game seven, he had just 16 total points in the series, 6 of 24 from the field, 4 of 18 from deep, average 2.7 points. Game seven, again, at home, role players are going to play better at home than they do on the road. So maybe there's something with that. But 14 points from him again, when you needed somebody to come off the bench and score, well, Tatum was trying to sit out with the four fouls and not get into foul trouble any more than he was. Pritchard came in, was knocking down threes. He even had his signature moment when he hit one of them late, pointing to the bench and, you know, pointing to himself, yelling, "That's what I do," or whatever he said. So good to see him again. Struggled the entire series, but gained some confidence. You saw a little bit of that from Derek White in the series. Of course, he came out and didn't have a great seven that game. I think he was like 1 for 10. But again, like the Bucks series seemed like a series where the Celtics, they needed guys to step up, and everyone at different points kind of did. And that's obviously what propelled them through the series. And like you said, it probably would have been a different series. Probably would have been a close. I mean, game seven, it's close regardless, but probably closer scores if Middleton played. And like you said, I'm not ready to put the Celtics over the top of Milwaukee for, like you said, years to come, just because things are going to be different next year. But obviously a big win from them, kind of exercising some demons from Milwaukee, knocking them out a couple of years ago. So good to see there.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, I love Pritchard, and I realize he struggles at times, but every time I see him just, like, start to get hot, it just, like, makes me smile, because he just, like, he's, like the scrappy dude of the team to me. Like, I just love it when he gets going, because he's got this, like, the swagger, you know, he's nice, he's a good, like, fast-paced, quick player to watch, got a really, like, nice shooting motion, which, you know, is always fun to watch. So good to see him step up. And yeah, like you mentioned, like everybody pretty much had their like signature moments in this series. And that's not to say like a signature moment can only be a one-time thing, but you had guys step up, you know, not every time you needed a, you know, a big stretch or, you know, a big performance, but you know, you did enough to get it done. It wasn't a perfect series, but you know, the Celtics, they were the better team when it all came down to it, obviously, you know, winning in seven games. But The craziest thing about this whole series, you know, I like Grant Williams. I do. I've been really impressed with him for large stretches of this season, but 27 points in game seven. Like, are you absolutely kidding me, dude? Like, there's
how he started that game too.
There's no chance I was expecting that. Like,
no, I mean, he started that game, I think, with two or three missed threes, and you could tell, like, you know, confidence maybe down a little bit because he was. Yeah, like, I mean, he was
for Grant Williams.
Like, yep, because like he was struggling in the series too. There were, I think, before this game seven, he was like 2 of 16 or something ridiculous from deep. He was horrible in Milwaukee, and then to come out and like he talked about it after the game, that the confidence that the guys or the team around him had to tell him keep shooting it if you're open, because the Bucks, start of the game, yeah, you're probably going to leave Grant Williams open because of what I just said. You know, they know the stat line, how much he's struggling. But after he hits three or four threes, you might maybe want to cover him, but they just decided to leave him open all game. I think it was Ime Udoka who told Grant Williams, like, they're disrespecting you. If they're going to disrespect you all game, don't be afraid to shoot the ball. That's obviously great to see, you know, Grant Williams have some confidence and put out the, you know, the stat line and the performance that he did, because they needed him to. Like I said, with Tatum on the bench, and that was kind of going to get to my next point that kind of transitions us into the Heat stuff, is it seemed like every time the Celtics had some sort of adversity in this series, they overcame it, or, you know, they had a bad performance. They got punched in the mouth. That's kind of the phrase we've been using a lot in these playoffs for them. They've come back, and now you kind of hope after what happened last night, as we get into the Heat stuff, you kind of hope you see that again. And obviously, you know, the Celtics got dealt a crappy hand to start. I don't want to put it all on the fact that Horford and Smart were, you know, knocked out right before the game started. But that, you know, goes in with a little bit. I've seen some people on Twitter saying, you know, oh, Celtics fans are overreacting, you know, that, you know, they lose because of, you know, Al Horford being out, but he's a big loss. We'll get into the what happened in the third quarter. I wanted to try to get some of the positives at the start of the game out of the way first, but like that third quarter, I think I tweeted it out when it happened, the run for Miami started happening. That's a spot where you miss a guy like Al Horford just to take guys aside and take Tatum and Brown aside, who were turnover machines, and go, hey, like, let's calm it down here. Get back to the boy you play. You tried to see Marcus Smart do that on the bench as an inactive, but obviously it didn't work. Both of them not being able to play hurt them a lot. It didn't seem like it at the start, but as things kind of unraveled, you miss those two guys in the long run.
Yeah, it's always tough when you lose guys like so close to game time, especially two leaders. Mm-hmm. One last thing about the Bucks, like to see them dominate like that and just like close the game out, win by 20, was just like, you can win an 8-point game or whatever and be fine with it. But like, just to see them win so decisively, it was, you know, really encouraging for the Heat series and hopefully more. On the Heat series, you know, with the third quarter being a like big topic in this game, I didn't catch a lot of it. So I'm obviously going to defer to you in that event for talking about the third quarter, but it wasn't the cleanest Celtics game, and I think a lot of that is to attribute to not having Horford and Smart.
Mm-hmm. I think too, just watching the game, like they've done it in the play. Like you want to think that they didn't get away from this type of stuff, because it's happened in every series so far where they take a quarter off, but there's a lapse of, you know, how they're supposed to play. We've talked about it before. Like they get into to iso ball too much, not moving the ball. So it seems like we're kind of beating the dead horse that with these problems, but it happens again. Like I was surprised, maybe not surprised, because Miami and Milwaukee are two totally different teams defensively, but I was talking to a buddy of mine and I said, it's kind of fun, or it's enlightening, I guess, or lack of a better term. It's just nice to, you know, the way they started the game off is they were attacking the basket. It looked like a regular basketball game. They weren't coming down the floor and shooting threes because they had to, because they couldn't attack the basket with 2 7-footers like they couldn't with Milwaukee. But start of the Heat, the game, they punched Miami in the mouth again, lack of a better term. We keep using that phrase. But they got out and ran. You know, Tatum was aggressive attacking the basket. Jaylen Brown was aggressive to start. They were, getting into the paint, weren't afraid to go at Bam Adebayo, who's a tough guy to go against. And they kind of, it seemed like they caught Miami off guard a little bit. You know, they go on a 7-0 run to start the game. Miami was 0-7. Celtics defense, getting Rob Williams back, was a great addition. Obviously, without having Al Horford, that helps even more. But he looked great to start the game. 12 points in the first quarter. He played the majority of the first, he played 8 minutes in the first quarter, played the majority of it, 8 points in the first, was 3 of 3, 3 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 block. He looked as good as he's looked all playoffs. You know, he's been out, 4 or 5 games in a row now, hasn't played since game 3 against Milwaukee, I think it was, kind of lost track now. He looked a little gassed at the end of the first quarter. I think the broadcast crew said that, which was expected. The guy hasn't played in a while, but other than that, didn't really seem like there was any sort of rust. If you can get him going the way he's been, he looked like a legitimate problem for Miami the first half of the game. Obviously, second half, they kind of bogged down on the lobs to him, and they had Bam Adebayo defend him better in the second half. But he looked good. Tatum, everybody kind of had the same thought. You know, he was the best player on the planet in the first half, 21 points, the game high going into halftime. Was aggressive. Like I said, 5 assists, 4 rebounds, had a steal on a block. But PJ Tucker got on him in the second half. They shut him down for the most part. And again, like this guy started falling in that second half, or that third quarter, second half, and it kind of fell apart. But again, it stinks to talk about, because we're kind of talking about the same stuff with the Celtics third quarter. sky starts falling, you know, the roof starts caving in and they can't get out of it, which is the most frustrating thing. But give credit to Miami. They pretty much did everything they needed to. They shut down Tatum. Brown couldn't really get anything going. And then they kind of knew that after that, like, again, Grant Williams had a nice series finale against Milwaukee, but role player on the road, they tend to play different. Peyton Pritchard couldn't really get anything going until late. I found it funny. I was talking with a buddy of mine before the game started. I'm like, well, if now with the Celtics not having Horford and Smart, you're going to maybe have to have somebody else come off the bench and step up. I'm like, maybe Nesmith will see some time just as a body in case. And he's like, I doubt you'll see Nesmith. They'll probably just shorten the rotations even more. Found it funny. Nesmith got some minutes, didn't look bad out there. He gave you something on the defensive end. 11 minutes he played, didn't have any points, but had a rebound, three blocks and a steal. He looked like, you know, he was energized to be out there. So he gave you something. Like I said, Peyton Pritchard played pretty good. He had 18 points, kind of kept the Celtics in the second half for the most part, you know, with his shooting. So again, good to see him, you know, stay confident after game seven, but just that third quarter run. I mean, Tatum, like I said, turned the ball over way too much. I think he had six turnovers for the third quarter alone. Yeah. Six turnovers for Tatum, two for Brown. Tatum had three in 33 seconds, which was ridiculous. Ime Udoka called a timeout, and then he turned the ball over right after that. So not great. Miami goes on a 22-2 run to start the quarter, 39-14. They outscore them. Everything, it seemed like everything that could have gone right for Miami went right. Everything that could have went wrong for the Celtics went wrong. And like I said at the start, it's a spot where you miss a guy like Al Horford or Marcus Smart to try to stop the bleeding. You would have liked to have seen Tatum and Brown. That was kind of the surprising thing for me, is we've been through this, like I said, a couple times now in these playoffs where things start to go wrong. And, you know, you kind of see the Celtics get out of it a little bit, and you kind of look to Tatum and Brown to be those guys, especially without Horford and Smart there. And Tatum and Brown kind of just collapsed with everything else. Like I said, Tatum was terrible in the third quarter. Thought 5 points, all of them were free throws. Jaylen Brown had 2 points. All those were free throws. So couldn't really get anything going. And again, I think that's a little bit of their struggles, and maybe the moment getting too big with, you know, the way the third quarter was going. You know, Miami was starting to get some calls. Celtics were turning into the Celtics of old and starting to complain to the refs and stuff like that. And then again, Miami, just Jimmy Butler taking over. And I talked about it last week. I think I made the reference to, I think the Al Horford thing was, you know, you took the Jordan meme, where, you know, I took that personal. Jimmy Butler, I think, heard a lot of people talk about Jason Tatum as the best player in the series. May have taken that personal because he was excellent in the second half too. So like I said, I don't want to take anything away from what Miami did. And I know I'm just kind of screwing a lot at you right now, so apologies for that. But it was, that's kind of what the third quarter felt like. Like, it was everything moving 100 miles per hour, and you really couldn't figure out what the hell was going wrong and, you know, what to do to stop it. So again, to sum it up, kudos to Miami for what they did. They definitely turned the physicality up in the third quarter, and Boston just did not have an answer, which was discouraging to see. But again, they've had moments like this before, and that's kind of what I'm going to get into when I get into, you know, the rest of the series, is they've bounced back from adversity before. Yeah. They've bounced back from an ass kicking before. So it's one game. I'm not too overly worried about things. Am I thrilled at how things went down? You know, you had a chance to steal game one. You steal game one on the road, the series might head in a completely different direction. But I don't think they're going to lose game two in Miami. Like, I figured they would split on the road to start the series and then kind of go from there. But I don't know. It was, like I said, kind of a rough ending to what was a really good start and a really, like I said, refreshing start to see the Celtics kind of get back to the way they had been playing all season. We were able to play now that Milwaukee's gone.
Yeah, one thing to note too that I think some Celtics fans may have lost sight of and just kind of like acknowledged it, but didn't really like talk about it, like when evaluating the game, maybe, so to say, was that the Heat didn't have Kyle Lowry either. So
yeah, that's a big thing.
Mentioning. Yep. One thing I've noticed is I love Jaylen Brown. Anybody on this podcast knows, but he's had a couple series now where he's had bad game ones.
Mm-hmm. He does get off to a slow start, which is a little discouraging. Yeah. But again,
we've also, like, seen him go off too.
Exactly. So, like, that's what I mean.
He can snap, crackle, and pop whenever he wants to, it seems, at times. You know, it's not like he's this automatic, you know, stud. But, you know, when he's on, he's on. We saw that in particular against the Nets, that one game. I'm drawing a blank on which one it was.
Yeah, but even the Milwaukee series, like we just said, like game one, that was the thing. Game one, he did not have a good game by any means. He was getting blasted by a lot of people in the media, or not blasted, but there were a lot of people questioning, you know, his performance. And great. Exactly. But that Brooklyn game series, one. Yep. But fourth quarter, he performed in those series. Game two in the I said was his game in the Milwaukee series, a 30-point game that was after a bad performance in game one. So I feel like we're going to see the same thing tomorrow night. You know, a lot of people are getting on Jaylen Brown right now. Again, rightfully so, because he was bad up until the fourth quarter. He kind of got the Celtics back in it with some big shots, but it was a little bit too late. I don't expect him to perform that bad again in game two. I would probably lean more towards the Milwaukee performance that he had, the 30-point performance that he'll have hopefully tomorrow night, because I think he can bounce back. And
Ryan? Hello. Ryan?
Hello.
Okay.
Okay.
That's bizarre. Back.
I thought you were just going to sit there and pause for like 20 seconds
just
and come back.
Wait for your answer.
Said Zoom restarted.
Uh huh.
And you were just frozen, like still.
You froze on mine. And then it, like I said, I texted you. It, Zoom just completely shut down on my laptop. So I'm like, that's not good. But so
I think that happened to me once. Like,
did it? Okay.
So nope. I don't think it's completely unfamiliar, but.
Adapt and overcome, like we usually do.
Adapt and overcome.
Technical difficulties, nothing new.
Nothing we're not used to. Mm-hmm. It doesn't help either, you know, just getting back into the game that Jimmy Butler, you know, you had him as, you know, one of the big guys coming into this series. Bam Adebayo had some moments, some stretch where he was really good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're struggling, you know, you kind of hope to aid in your comeback efforts, you know, maybe – some guys on the other team struggle, you can shut them down. And it just didn't really seem like that for the bits and pieces of the game I saw. I didn't watch it as intently as most. I was kind of just gassed last night and kind of went in and out of the game. So that's why I don't have a ton to say. But it just kind of seemed like, you know, when it was bad, you know, obviously in the third quarter was real bad, and that's just not the best time to falter if you're the Celtics. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I saw a lot of people saying, you know, oh, the third quarter Celtics. I don't think they've been bad in, like, every third quarter, but, you know, I don't know.
When they've been bad, it's been bad. Like, it's,
That's the vibe I get. You know, I remember the game I was at against Brooklyn. They came out with a huge third quarter. I think in the Milwaukee game, they had like 11 points in the first like 2 minutes of the third quarter, if I'm not mistaken. I might be wrong. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, even with the Celtics, you know, establishing this new like identity of the team, they're, you know, they're still going to have hiccups. And as you and I both alluded to, it's not like anything that worries me super much about the team, but it's just like something to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. And we're both in the camp of, you know, we think they're going to bounce back in game two and win game two.
Yeah, because even like I'm just was pawing for the box score right now. Like, again, I don't want to take anything away from what Miami did, but like, and again, like the game was lost in the third quarter. So it's not like, again, the people that are like, oh, the Celtics won 3 out of 4 quarters. Again, that does mean something, but I just, at that point, like I was just, you lost. So it's not nothing, but there is something to that. I mean, you look at the fourth quarter, just box score alone. We talk about Jimmy Butler, like moving forward in this series, like that's obviously going to be the guy that you have to shut down. You have to keep him off the free throw line. He had 18 free throw attempts, which to some people will be like, oh, well, the calls must've been, no, this isn't. I was talking to friends of mine today. This isn't a Giannis situation where everything ticky tacky is getting called or he's barreling guys over and he's getting to the free throw line. Like, Jimmy Butler knows how to legitimately get to the free throw line. He looks to get contact with guys and looks for guys. Look, he's looking, excuse me, for guys that, you know, reach, that bite on his pump face, which the Celtics did. And they talked about that in the post game. You know, they have to be better at not reaching and not, like I said, jumping on pump fakes and stuff like that. So if they can avoid Butler getting to the free throw line, and then again, looking at the fourth quarter, Bam Adebayo had 1 point. They held him in check pretty much all game, which I thought was pretty surprising because Bam Adebayo usually has pretty good games against the Celtics. Maybe that's the fact that Rob Williams is back. I think obviously he helps a ton there. And then just like, I just, there's some guys on Miami. Like PJ Tucker is a nice piece, but he's not an offensive weapon. Like, he's more of a guy that you saw will just completely forego the offensive side of the ball until they need a big shot. And then he'll mainly factor in on defense, which he did. Like I said, he shut down Tatum in the entire second half. Max Strus, former Celtic, which I completely forgot about. He had some big shots in the fourth quarter, but, you know, he really didn't have any, you know, a stellar performance. Like, he
Max Strus villain origin story.
Yeah, I guess. But like, he had 11 points. He wasn't shooting the ball all that great. Tyler Hero, who I'd like to know what Boston did to Tyler Hero, because every time he plays the Celtics, he kills them. Like, he had 18 points, but he's a guy that is streaky. You saw that in the bubble at times when the Celtics played him. You know, he's either really on or really off. Jimmy Butler was really the one guy that carried Miami. And again, that he stepped up the physicality and Boston couldn't answer. Like, you kind of expect that on the road. Like, if this was a game at home and this happened to the Celtics and they couldn't bounce back, then I would have some more concerns with this team. But the fact that this happened in Miami, and again, it kind of looked like the Celtics just got caught up in the moment in the third quarter. And again, the fact that, like I said, it took 41 points from Jimmy Butler. He dominated the entire second half. Like, if you can shut him down, and again, kind of the same thing you do with Milwaukee, force other guys to step up. And again, it goes into getting Marcus Smart and Al Horford back. Like, the Celtics supporting cast is better on paper and in the eye test than Miami supporting cast. Like, you should be able to knock this team off. And I don't want to say pretty handedly, but like, this, to me, this should just be an easier series than Milwaukee was. Just the fact that, again, Miami is a physical team, but like, I Miami doesn't scare me as much as Milwaukee did. Like, I think you got past your harder series. It feels like I'm taking a lot away from Miami because I like their team. And I like Jimmy Butler, who's got that killer instinct. Eric Spoelstra is the biggest thing that scares me with Miami. Like, just his ability to change up on the fly and throw different looks at you on defense, which he did in that bubble series. Again, different situation, but that's all he did was just change up looks and the Celtics couldn't figure it out. Like, he worries me more than anything else in this Miami team, but again, just from like looking from afar from game to, again, box score stuff, like, this is, the Celtics don't have as bad as a third quarter as they did. They win that game, which is, again, obviously dumb to say, like, duh, that it goes without saying, but that's why I think a lot of people, like, I don't know how concerned people are. You and I don't seem like we're all that concerned about this performance. Cause again, it goes into what this Celtics team has done kind of all playoffs. And like I said, jumping in now, just predictions for the rest of the series, you know, you saw the Celtics lose game one against Milwaukee at home. They lose by 12. They come back and win game two by 23. They have the heartbreaking loss in game five. They blow their big lead against Milwaukee. Game six, they win on the road by 13. You know, they've shown this before. They struggled. They've come back and they've played arguably some of their best games after, you know, some adversity and some pretty gut punching losses. So hopefully they can do that going into game two. Will Marcus Smart and Al Horford play? Right now, according to the Celtics injury report, it looks like Marcus Smart is probable. Al Horford is doubtful. He's probably not going to come back until game three, which stinks, but that's something to get you up for. You know, if you go back to Boston tied 1-1 and now you're getting Al Horford back, that's just another shot of adrenaline that will help you out. But that's the big thing. You need one of these two guys to come back. And like I said, Smart's probably going to play tomorrow, which is good, because if you get Smart back and Miami still doesn't have Kyle Lowry, which you mentioned, who isn't playing, that's a big loss. That's a big swing. You know, I'll take Marcus Smart in this series because, again, he could have been the difference last night, again, just from a veteran standpoint, being out there trying to stop the bleeding in that third quarter. So if he's out there, maybe things go differently. Maybe things don't get as bad as they were. And it also doesn't help to have a guy that can, you know, get you 15 to 20 points if need be. The Celtics, like I said, in the second half, kind of missed that guy. Peyton Pritchard was that at the end of the game a little bit, but again, a little bit too late. So getting Smart back out there will obviously help out a ton. Again, that goes kind of without saying as well.
Yeah, the big thing, you know, that helps the Celtics going into game two is Kyle Lowry's already ruled out.
Okay, Izzy, I didn't see that, so that's good.
Back.
Yep.
I'm trying to get the iMessage window off my screen. I guess I just got to click out of it. Blocking things right now, but yeah, I mean, to get into predictions, you know, we both said we have the Celtics winning game two. I have Celtics in seven for the series. I think they'll win games 2, 4, 6, and 7, and I'll lose 1, 3, and 5. Yeah, I've kind of been, ever since they knocked off Milwaukee, kind of like, the Bruins were kind of in this way too. Like, if they beat Carolina, I think that was probably their hardest series, at least for a round, because I think they would have beaten the Rangers and Penguins, either one in like six games, if they were on top of things. Like, the Celtics got their toughest series, potentially the whole playoffs, out of the way. So I think they could beat the Heat, and, you know, I'm kind of falling into what you were saying. Like, you know, we don't want to discredit the Heat too much, but it's just how it is. The Heat don't have a Giannis. They just don't. Jimmy Butler is great. Bam Adebayo is great. Kyle Lowry is, you know, a very good complimentary piece to those two guys when he is in the mix, but he's not right now. You know, I think the Heat are going to battle, and it's going to be a tough, long series, but I have the Celtics just pulling it out. I think when they need the killer instinct to set in, they get it. You know, like you've said, the Heat have gotten that in the past from Jimmy Butler, so you have to worry about that. You know, maybe anyone else that could step up. But I just have faith in the Celtics, man. It's hard to really doubt them with how, you know, resilient they've been all year, how much they bought into the system. And if, you know, Smart and Horford can stay healthy, you know, the team can stay healthy. Or, well, Smart and Horford can get healthy first. I like their chances against anyone.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of going into the playoffs. That was the big thing for the Celtics, is the one concern people have with them is health. Obviously, you've seen it. The thing you have to watch out for now, too, is Rob Williams did leave the game yesterday with, I think it was a cramp. So a lot of people thought it was the injured knee when he first left, but that's a good news, obviously, that it wasn't. He wasn't even on the injury report, so I guess he's good to go. But that'll be something just to keep an eye on. And like you said, getting Horford back healthy is the big thing. The one thing I am a little worried about in this series, and I think you did see it in game one, is, you know, we talked about it. You have a physical, grueling series with Milwaukee, and, you know, now people today are kind of brought it up a little bit that the Celtics, you get off a seven-game series with defending champions, and you have one day off now to try to game plan for Miami. Miami, I think, did have more time off than the Celtics, so obviously getting rid of Philadelphia in six. So maybe there was a little bit of momentum there, so, you know, to help Miami a little bit out more. So that's kind of the one thing. I hope the Celtics didn't, you know, waste all their energy, not waste it, but, you know, exert all their energy in the Milwaukee series and now comes out flat in this series. But I think that it was just kind of a one-off thing. Like I said, one day to prepare for a Miami Heat team that can come at you as fast as they did. Not surprising that they, and it's a little surprising, but, you know, it's surprising the way obviously it fell apart, but not surprising that, you know, Miami, you know, played the way they did. I have the Celtics in six. I just think, again, home court advantage is going to be so key in this series. So I think the Celtics would be best to close this thing out in six, close it out in Boston. Obviously lose game one. I have them winning games 2, 3, and 4. I just think, again, home court advantage is going to be big. I think the Celtics can win on the road. I don't think Miami can. If you look at Miami's playoffs so far, the only losses they had have had have been on the road. They're 8-0, I believe, at home now. So that's, I think, something to keep an eye on. The Celtics are 4-2 now on the road. So that's, again, something to look at. But I think they can close it out in six. I think they can win every game they have at home. Lose game one, lose game five. Miami, you know, stays alive with a game five win in Miami. But I think the Celtics get the crowd behind them, get some guys healthy. They're the more complete team. And again, limit Jimmy Butler, keep him away from the free throw line. I think they'll learn from that mistake. You're not going to see him have 18 free throws again. Probably maybe for the entire series, because it's just like he said it last night, you know, he wanted to, you know, find a way to score. You know, if he get to the free throw line, he will. So that's a big thing too. I think, again, Tatum and Brown will bounce back. They won't have as bad as a performance I think they had in game one. Definitely when it comes to turning, like, protecting the basketball, I think you could see Tatum was frustrated in game one, rightfully so. But that's something they have to be better at too. We've talked about this enough that, you know, Tatum and Grant Williams, especially last night, was atrocious when it came to barking at the referees and complaining about stuff. So get that out of the mentality and hopefully you can move forward. But we have high hopes for this team, even though it was a kind of a rough start, but nothing we're too worried about.
Yeah, that's a consistent thing.
I was going to say, even if, like, I mean, it's not going to look great, but if they lose two, again, I just don't think the Heat can beat the Celtics in Boston. So I think, like, the game they did, I say that, and the last game of the season the Celtics played against the Heat, there was that collapse game that I was at that Miami beat them, but Celtics didn't have Rob Williams. Again, they collapsed in that game. They had it pretty much the entire way. So I just think, again, home court's going to be a big thing. So the Celtics win on the road, do your job tomorrow night, steal one in Miami, come back to Boston, and hopefully put the Heat in a 3-1 series hole.
Yeah, just get it done. Get it done.
It's as simple as that, right? When you really just lay it out like that, just get it done.
Really just get down to it. Really just get down to brass tacks. Yeah, it comes back. I got a lot of faith in this team. I'm really not worried. You know, anybody watching can tell by my facial expressions, you know, I don't look worried, and I'm not. So we'll see what happens, though. You never truly know. It's the playoffs, baby.
Yep, anything can happen.
Anything can truly happen. On to Bruins. You know, I mean,
let the sigh out now.
Yeah, I mean, I picked Bruins in six. I thought they could do it. I got to that point before, you know, the series started. But I had the feeling in the back of my mind Carolina was going to win. We said, you know, towards the end, I think, of the Bruins segment last week, I had Hurricanes in seven. I thought it was going to go down just like this. And unfortunately, it did. You know, it's just the series was predictable. It, you know, you never truly know in the moment, but looking back at it, you know, it had a rhythm to it. And not a good one for the Bruins. Let's just get started. Game six.
Try to work our way through it.
Game six, you know, that was good. I mean, that was good. Brad Marchand scores a goal very reminiscent of game six against Carolina in 2011.
Yep.
That absolute snipe, one of the best goals I've ever watched, one of my favorite all-time Bruins goals. Yeah, that was good. That was a great start. You know, gets the fellas going. But Charlie Coyle added a little more comfort. You know, power play goal, kind of a broken play. Lindholm, I love Lindholm on this play. I think people kind of lost that. He has the patience to move around a little bit down the wall, find the patience to, you know, in the lane to find Marchand up top, pass the shot, you know, off the pass from Marchand, kicks to Coyle who buries it, you know, right place, right time. Typical Charlie Coyle type of goal. He had a solid playoffs overall. He, you know, he wasn't happy with the third line, but, you know, I thought overall Charlie Coyle was the best player on that line by a significant margin.
By far, yep.
A very significant margin. I'm just going to reference, you know, before we get into my notes, I took on my laptop, you know, outside of the outline. During game six, I thought they battled in the first period. It wasn't great. It wasn't bad. You know, the Marchand goal kind of got to that point. And in this game, you know, we'll talk, I'm sure we'll talk about it as we go, like, more through it. They had an insane penalty-killing effort in this game. Penalties galore. You know, Carolina had ample opportunities. The best part of the Marchand goal, I forgot to mention, was the bad line change by Tony D'Angelo. So, once it's, you know, for once, it's not Brad Marchand making
the bad line. He's on the team. Yep, the right end of that.
Yeah, he is. I thought they picked their spots well physically, you know, throughout the game and, you know, in the first period to start. And they didn't dominate the game, but they did well enough to get it done in big moments. You know, that might sound stupid to say, given the fact that they won by three goals, but it's not like Carolina was, like, out of the game constantly. You know, they weren't – this definitely wasn't Carolina's best game, but, you know, I thought they had moments, but the Bruins just didn't let them have enough to make it super nerve-wracking outside of course, you know, Svechnikov's third period goal, his first goal of two, which actually segues us in pretty well. Fortunate bounce to D'Angelo, like inside the offensive blue line, he finds Svechnikov. Swayman just can't get over in time, not really going to blame him. It was just a good quick shot by Svechnikov. I mean, the guy was a 30-goal scorer for a reason in the regular season. He buries one, makes things a little interesting. But one of the best moments of the game, you know, there was a lot to like in this game, but I just love when Charlie McAvoy goes into, like, fuck it mode and just takes the game over for himself.
Does a little bit of everything. Yeah.
Mike Riley was the closest defenseman to the puck and McAvoy's like, screw it. I'm just going to sneak into the middle, take charge. Just puts a buttery biscuit right on Halla's plate and he tips it in. Selly's on, you know, down on one knee right in front of Tony D'Angelo. I'm surprised D'Angelo didn't try to decapitate him or something.
Throw a stick or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. But, what a goal. I mean, Charlie McAvoy is just the man. It's just nothing new. The fourth line in this game was solid, especially on the forward goal. They battle for a little while there, get the puck back to forward. I thought this was tipped by either a Carolina defender or Lazar, but they gave credit to forward. It wasn't tipped. Good play by Foligno to get the puck over to Lazar for the empty netter. And game over. Besides, you know, the erroneous goal that Svechnikov scored. I'm not saying that, like, all the Bruins won, like, it doesn't even matter. I didn't realize it went in, and neither did the TNT announcers, and Jeremy Swayman just didn't even look like he cared.
So yeah, no, it didn't seem like anybody did it.
It was pretty funny. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
Any overall, like, you know, are you in the same boat as me for this game? You know, anything else that stuck out to you? I mean, the penalty kill was remarkable.
Penalty kill was fantastic.
Forbert,
I thought
Carlo. I think Forbert, you know, had a great series overall, but you know, for Carlo to step up in that moment, was huge, and hopefully a sign of things to come. You know, he didn't have the most sparkling game seven, but
I thought Lindholm was excellent in this game.
Lindholm being as comfortable as he was really encouraging after coming back, and we'll talk pretty much about everybody when we're talking about the, you know, the breakup day stuff and talks from Cassie and Sweeney. But your thoughts on game six?
Yeah, like I said, I thought Lindholm was excellent. I thought Swayman obviously had his best performance. Like, there was the first period. He, like you said, the penalty killing was great, but he obviously counts as one of your penalty killers. He was fantastic. You gotta, again, backs against the wall. The Bruins played their best game of the season, and then you saw what happened in game seven. Makes me go back to my thought I had in last week's show that, like, I would have rather, like, again, that's such a shitty thing to say, but I would have rather you lost game six, because you have a performance like they had in game six. I'm trying to get to the point.
I know,
like,
what you're getting at. Yeah.
Yeah. They had a performance in game six where, like, you got contributions from pretty much everybody. Like you said, the fourth line was great. You got, like I said, a goal from Derek Forbort. He played phenomenal.
Overall was solid.
Defense for the first time all series.
Stuck out as like the eyesore or the eyesore pairing in particular.
Take Matt Grzelcyk out of the lineup. We didn't even touch on that. He's the guy that gets the boot, and look what happens. Like, the defense looked great.
He's another guy we'll talk about a little bit, you know, with the breakup day stuff.
And, but that's a
little bit more of the reason why he was out of the lineup.
You get the stuff that comes out afterwards, so it makes a little bit more sense. Just the point I wanted to make, and again, it's going to sound terrible, and no one's going to agree with me. I don't blame people for not, but, like, you get a performance like this where, again, everything for the most part goes right, and then to see what happens in game seven, it's like, all right, well, like, how can you – maybe it's just the fact that it was the home-and-home feature, like, that nobody was able to take a game on the road, but, like, you have such an inspiring performance in game six and then come out, like, as flat as they maybe have come out all season in game seven. It's like, what the hell? Like, why couldn't you figure something out in the series to steal one on the road when you have, like I said, such a great performance as they did? That was the biggest frustrating thing about game seven as we get into that for me. Like,
look, I'm not going to get into the whole, like, whether we're not going to get into it super in depth about, you know, Cassidy and Sweeney's jobs, but I'm going to put this out there for the people who think Bruce Cassidy should be fired. This is the one reason I get it. The one in particular, you know, you can nitpick certain things in, like, a smaller scale, but I got to be honest, dude, you know, 2020, you lose in overtime against the Lightning, heartbreaker. That's, like, the one that doesn't really fall into this. You know, that was heartbreaking, you know, not only because of the loss. You have Halak. He has to, you know, be forced into a big role. You see Krejci looking all distraught at the end of the game, like, shocked. That was just tough to see for Krejci. But going back to 2019, dude, you had last year, they got speed bagged by the Islanders at the end, you know, some injuries. You know, Carlo got hurt. That didn't help. And now in game seven this year, when things are at their most, you know, crucial, the Bruins just don't, like, they don't have it.
There's no, like, get up for the game, it seems like.
They don't have it. And it's really, really discouraging because, you know, it starts with game seven in 2019. You don't give Tuukka Rask enough support. If he wasn't perfect in the game, you don't score until, like, 2 minutes and 10 seconds left, whatever the fuck. And it's Matt Grzelcyk who scores the goal. Like, it kind of reminds me, like, what Clifton had to do. That one game, Clifton scored the late goal. Like, it's Connor Clifton of all people. Like, I like Connor
Clifton, your goal scorer.
Of all people, your goal scorer. When things matter the most, I do have a problem with how the team plays and how they're not consistently in the game enough, it feels like. They're not able to break through. Credit to Carolina. Carolina, I saw, you know, on the broadcast just now, the Rangers and Carolina game. In the first round, they had the most percentage of zone entries created by a dump-in of any team in the first round at 56%. And that worked for them. The Bruins couldn't keep the puck in the offensive zone long enough to establish pressure when it meant the most. They could do it at home enough to win, but they couldn't do it on the road. Carolina just, you know, they got contributions from the back end that the Bruins didn't get. The Bruins, you know, had good defensive performances here and there, but Carolina, in terms of point production, got way more. Tony D'Angelo led them in points. And, you know, they got production from other guys as well, Slavin, so on and so forth. A little bit from some of the other guys. And the biggest thing, you know, the biggest storyline of the series, I think, was the tale of two Bruins teams. Yep. And whether it's at home or away in, you know, games in the past, whether it's the Islanders series, the Blues series, and the Cup final, I have a real problem with how the Bruins, you know, especially, you know, the last game of the Islanders series, the last game seven of this series, game seven of the Cup final. I'm not saying like every game that counts, they struggle. You got to put some blame on Bruce Cassidy. Because
it's almost like I'm not saying there's a
disconnect between him and the players. You know, there could be. We don't know. I'm not going to say that because I don't know for sure. It's not my right. It just sounds stupid for me to assume that's the issue. But Bruce and the team need to do a better job of adapting on the fly and being able to win these games. Because if they can extend this window, whether Bergeron stays or whatever they do to, you know, potentially stay in the playoffs in the future, hopefully. And if this keeps happening, like, it's just going to be all this hope for the Bruins for nothing. And you're never going to, this sounds obvious, but you're never going to win another Stanley Cup in years to come if you can't fix this, because it's going to be the same thing every year.
And I was going to say
something's got to change, and it doesn't need to be Bruce Cassidy getting canned, but something seriously needs to change, because whether it's under Charlie in his career or Bergeron, I'm not blaming either of them. It's not a leadership thing to me as much as it could be a coaching thing. And some people might disagree. That's fine. But it's weird and it's frustrating to me. It really is. And I wish it wasn't the case, because it weighs on the brain and not in a good way.
Well, I was going to say it's kind of becoming the identity of the team almost over the last couple of years. Like, get to a big moment and kind of crumble. Like, you even saw it in the end of the first period in this game. Like, they played probably their best first period they've played all playoff long. They stuck with Carolina, made some big saves. You get a late goal from Teravainen, and then immediately after that, you get the really shitty Hall penalty. If they survived, thankfully survived the Hall penalty. It was Hall, right, that took the stupid high-sticking penalty at the end of the first period, if I'm mistaken. Am I frozen again on your screen?
No.
Okay, I thought it was. That was Hall, right, that took the penalty, the high sticking. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Whoever it was, but that's what I mean. Like, one bad thing happens and then everything starts to snowball. So it's like, again, it just feeds into like this team in big moments or, you know, of late big games, game sevens, like can't seem to figure it out, get out of their own way. Like, it's just, that again was one of the more frustrating things. It's like, all right, here we go again, where something bad happens and it just kind of escalates and they can't get out of it.
Yeah. They can't push through. I don't really get what it is, because they have guys that I have faith in to get them to push through.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, it's not
and they just can't do it. And it's not as much as they get discouraged, just that they can't do it. They can't overcome. But it was like definitely that case in a different way with the Islanders last year. But with Carolina, it wasn't like a new thing. I think it was a little more fresh to be, you know, kind of dominated like the Bruins were at times late in the Islanders series, more so because, like, on the road, Carolina dominated you the large majority of their time on home ice as a whole. So I think they did that more so than the Islanders did. It's just like, I had hoped that they were going to win this game, but I couldn't get the thought out of the back of my mind that this was going to happen again, because the series was laid out that way. And it ended that way. You know, the Bruins only lost by one goal in game seven, as we get into that more. But it's just, there's more bad than good, obviously, in a loss. But it sucks. It sucks. And, I mean, Jeremy Swayman, 28 saves, 31 shots, his final game of the season, a great rookie year for him. I think one thing I've noticed about Swayman that, you know, I hope – no, obviously this would be bad in turn, because it means the Bruins defense probably isn't playing too good. But I've noticed a lot this season that Swayman doesn't get a lot of high shot volume. And I think games with high shot volume mixed in a little more, you know, like I said, that would probably mean the Bruins are not playing so great defense, are going to be good for him. And I'm not saying he desperately needs these, but I think those types of games are once in a while do help. And he was used to it in junior hockey with the Sioux Falls Stampede, and then at Maine, because they were teams that weren't great defensively. And it helped him in his development because he was, you know, not really shook by high shot volume, which is good, which is important. You know, just a quick example, people had doubts about Dryden McKay, who led the Minnesota State Mankato team to the Frozen Four this year in the national championship, which they lost. They, you know, some teams were kind of seemed like scared away from him because he didn't face a lot of shot quality. The highest shot total I heard he faced this season was 28 shots. And I think for any goalie, you know, facing shot high shot, you know, quantity is good, especially early in a career. Just something I noticed, you know, not like a huge, like, chirp against Swayman, but I think games like that down the road will be good for him and help him. And I just noticed a lot throughout the season. I don't know if anybody else did that. You know, a lot of games, like 25 shots, 24 shots, like 31, 32, nothing really that much over it. You know, that shutout against Nashville, I think he made 42 saves, if I'm right off the top of my head. But just something I noticed. I was, you know, wondering, you know, if anybody in the chat or whatever who listens to the podcast after had noticed this as well, because, you know, we have the whole, all the stats for every game we break down, just something I've noticed throughout the year. But back to game seven, I mean, the Teravainen goal is not great. Mike Riley is chasing Trocheck around the net and gets caught on his offside. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as they turned the offense around quickly to create the scoring chance that led to the goal, Riley's caught on the offside. Carlo is doing his best to neutralize Domi and Teravainen at the same time. Reasonably so. Tough task. Can't do it. Coyle, too soft on Slavin on the point. At the point, you know, gotta put a little more pressure on him because we saw throughout this series, an innocent shot from Slavin can turn into something bad. Like,
yep.
It can turn into a goal. It can turn into a crazy tip from Seth Jarvis that we've seen. You got to be careful with Slavin. You got to put more pressure on him. Like, he's arguably the best defenseman in his own zone in the league. And he's kind of deceptively good in the offensive zone as well. You know, he's not a guy that's going to, you know, rip a point hammer every time or, like, take towards the offensive zone. Like, some defensemen will see do, like, Kale McCarr, just to name one. But he's like a thief in the night. You know, he's kind of, like, mysterious about him. Yeah, not good, not great start, you know. It's just tough to see Carolina score first on the road again. The Rangers scored first tonight on the road, though, against them.
Very nice.
Second goal for Carolina. Domi gets a good bounce and sneaks one in. This one is just unfortunate.
That one kind of had the feeling like this. I know it's early in the second period, but, like, this is over. Like, kudos to DeBrusk for soaring
to that point
so quick after, but. Again, it was like, all right, like, here we go again, that you're digging yourself out of a hole that you have yet to come out of in this, on the road, at least in this series.
Exactly.
So, like, it's obviously tough to see.
Yeah, I didn't, like, completely rule out the Bruins here, but I'm like, oh, no, like, it's back in my mind, like, please, no. And, like, the DeBrusk goal is exciting, and this is not, like, to, like, put a damper on the goal, but it's just, like, it didn't really do enough to be like, all right, we're gonna win this game.
Mm-hmm.
I had faith, but I wasn't like, all right, they're gonna win this now. Like, it wasn't one of those things, but it was nice. Potentially the last Selly season of Jake DeBrusk's Bruins career, which kind of sucks with how he turned things on. Ended up a 25 goal score in the regular season, 2 in the playoffs. It sounds like, you know, just a spoiler for our Bruins discussion later with, you know, breakup day and stuff and what Sweeney said today. It sounds like, you know, DeBrusk isn't finalized on it, but it sounds like the trade request has a good chance of standing still. So,
yep.
Yeah, it kind of stinks with how he's turned things on, but we'll see what happens. You know, we have no idea when exactly a trade is going to happen. So, could be draft day, could be a little bit before or whatever. We'll talk about that in the future. Yeah, but I mean, that goal, Bergeron to McAvoy, redirected to DeBrusk, who buries it. You know, hopefully, at this point, I'm hoping it's not the last time we see a DeBrusk goal as a Bruin, because I'd like for him to stay if he can keep this up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of that, depending on how, when Bergeron makes his decision, you know, if Bergeron retires before DeBrusk ends up getting traded, if DeBrusk sees Bergeron retire, he'd be like, yeah, I want out. Like, if I can't play with Bergeron,
probably,
like,
yep.
There's not like, oh, like, F you guys, like, Bergeron's gone, I'm gone. Just like, you know, part of my success, you know, me acting as Jake DeBrusk here, was because of Patrice Bergeron, playing with Patrice Bergeron more consistently, even on the off wing, from what he's typically used to. But, you know, that'll increase his trade value, being able to play both wings, you know, effectively now, which is good if the Bruins have to trade him.
That helps, yep.
I'm going to put this out here real quick, too. I think the Bruins can get a late first-round pick for Jake DeBrusk and get back into the first round.
Ooh, that would be nice.
At this point, dude, he's...
Is that what you do? Would you trade him for a guy that would replace him on the first line? Or would you look to his replacement somewhere else, ideally?
The first-round pick option is, like, a last resort. You know, not to say, like, a first-round pick wouldn't be good, but if you can get a guy to replace him, you know, whoever that may be. Like I said, we're not going to speculate too much on names throughout this episode, but... Mm-hmm. That would be ideal. I think that's what Sweeney still wants to do, but we'll see what happens. I think, you know, a first-round pick or, like, a second and a third, like a second and a prospect would be a terrible consolation prize, but we'll see what happens. The problem I really had, you know, this may seem obvious, like, oh, like, you know, they're down two, of course you have a problem with it, but just the laziness on the second Domi goal. Like,
yep.
That third line, you know, Coyle acknowledged they're not good enough. I don't want to see that third line together next year. I'm going to put out another bold thing next
year. I don't want to see Craig Smith here next year, in all honesty.
I want to see, like, Craig Smith on the fourth line next year.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably where he's best suited if he's going to be here, because he doesn't give you anything.
If he's going to have these stretches where he, you know, can't stick handle with the puck and handle the puck, you know, in transition or on the move very well consistently, I want him on the fourth line playing that energy role we saw at times. You know, where he'd randomly go screaming maniac and try and kill someone. I want him on the fourth line because I think a guy like Oscar Steen or Fabian Lysell is going to offer you more.
Mm-hmm. Anybody is at this point. Legitimately gave you nothing in the playoffs.
He's
like,
so good when he's at his best, and he just can't do that consistently enough. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they're going to put him on the fourth line, but, like, I'm cool with it if they do, because think about this. Like, say Mark McLaughlin is your fourth line center next year.
Having to play with Foligno and, like, Smith, then
you're running like Trent Frederick or Johnny Beecher if he makes the team on the wing. Mm-hmm. Beecher, McLaughlin, Smith, Frederick, McLaughlin, Smith is a pretty interesting line to me. I think it could work. And, you know, I don't think on the fourth line Craig Smith's, like, offensive effectiveness would be completely diminished, and I think he could help McLaughlin and or Frederick, Foligno. I don't think Anton Bleed's sticking around at this point.
Nope, he's gone.
He's gone.
No chance he comes back.
Kind of sucks because, you know, the guy's put in the work since, you know, being drafted in 2013. Kind of stinks to see it probably ending like this. Mm-hmm. Whoever's on that left wing, you know, whatever. But I hope to God Craig Smith can stick out, because if he doesn't, if he hopes to stay here, he's gone because he's a free agent two summers from now. So, yeah, he's got a lot to play for next year. But, I mean, the friggin' second Domi goal is just brutal.
Yep, it's a backbreaker and then some.
Too much space, you know, jump a wide open window to shoot because, you know, the defense isn't helping Swayman enough. You know, you could make the case Swayman could have gone out there, whatever. I'm not going to do that because I put this more on the defense. Just can't happen. That was the dagger for me. That's where I said it's over. Yep. In my head, I was like, it's over. It's not happening. I'm honestly surprised I didn't see people bitching about, like, oh, this is why the Bruins should have gotten Domi, dude.
I figured you were going to see that. Yeah.
I don't like him. I just don't like him. I don't like him. And I don't think this is going to be like a consistent, like, Max Domi identity or anything in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. He's a guy I'm just not a huge fan of as a player. Mm-hmm. I think he's hot or cold, but, you know, when he's good, he's good. You know, I'm not saying he's a terrible player, but, like, I was honestly surprised, you know, maybe there were, and I just didn't see him, that people weren't, like, screaming and crying about that.
I saw a couple that were, like, just a reminder, Max Domi was a trade deadline addition, but it wasn't anything like, well, the Bruins could have, like, should have went out and got him. Like, I mean, I found it kind of funny, too. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. A trade deadline piece is what's going to beat you. But, yeah, that's,
interested in him, but.
But they're
Brandon Kopp, not Brandon Kopp, Andrew Kopp as well. So
I would have liked him.
They're interested in Claude Giroux, and Claude Giroux said no. So
nope. And that worked out well for him in the long run. But who knows?
Yeah, Claude Giroux is doing pretty good in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this game just sucked. Pasta scores a late goal, but, you know, he was just
that's typical Bruins fashion. too. Yeah, sorry to cut you off, but like give you a little bit of hope at the very end. Like even I was like, oh, maybe there's a chance.
It really didn't do much for me.
No.
I was out. I was clocked. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, yeah, it's over.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, good to see them show some fight at the end. Mm-hmm. You know, fortunately for them in that goal, Slavin broke his stick like 5 seconds before the goal, so that kind of opened things up a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah, and once the game ended, like the emotions of it potentially being Patrice Bergeron's last as a Bruin just hit me at once. I just kind of like put my hands over my face and just kind of sat there. I didn't want to watch any of it. I was just sitting there just like kind of in shock. I was like, oh my God, that might have actually been the last time I get to watch Patrice Bergeron as a Bruin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's been around our whole lives pretty much.
Yeah, it's, yep.
And, you know, I, when I was younger, was more of a hockey fan before I, you know, or more of a baseball fan primarily until I got into hockey more so probably only 8, 9, 10 years old. Started playing when I was younger, but I always like baseball a little bit more. Shout out to Don Arcel and Jerry Remy for that, fostering that love for me and Nesson. But Patrice Bergeron, I mean, not only has he played since 2003, he's played since he was an 18-year-old. Like, he's been in the NHL forever, and he's dealt with a lot of injuries. And
he's been a pro's pro since day one. He really has. Like,
he's the most consummate pro we've ever witnessed in any sport.
I would definitely not debate that.
It's not debatable. It's just not. And, you know, it helps, you know, seeing him have lifted a cup. Hopefully, you know, he gets a chance to lift another one if he sticks around and the Bruins can pull something off in the future. But I just sat there in shock, like, hands over my face, just sitting there like, oh my God, like my heart rate went up. I was like, oh my God, like I couldn't process it. It like took me like a full day to process it. And it still, you know, it still sucks, the uncertainty, but I mean,
well, I think that's the biggest thing that makes this hurt too. Cause I mean, it's obviously a different situation when Chara left. It's a different situation when Rask, obviously you didn't really know about, but like that was kind of the thing. Like Chara, you knew was done. They had a replacement for Chara. Granted, were they the best replacements?
No.
We'll wait and see. No, we can say now, but like at least they had something in the pipeline that you could maybe say, okay, maybe you have a piece here and there to replace Chara. Rask, same thing. You had a replacement in Swayman coming up. With Bergeron, if he goes, you have nothing. Like, you have nothing on that first line to replace him. I mean, you still have Marchand, but like,
I got to be honest, if the Bruins, you know, we don't know what they're going to do if they have to replace Bergeron. I don't think there's much they can do to replace Bergeron and make the playoffs next year.
That's the problem. They're going to be a middle of the pack team, which you don't want to, because that's what everybody's starting to talk about now is I've seen people, I don't know if we're going to get into this later or not, or we planned on it, but like the people now, they're like, well, maybe they should try to move Marchand.
No.
You can't do that. No, first off, no, don't good do that luck, exactly.
Dude, but if Bergeron retires and Marchand gets traded, David Pastrnak won't come back.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You're going to lose a lot of guys. Pastrnak will go. I can't imagine Hall is going to want to stick around. Like,
you need
Coyle, he probably, like, that's what I mean. Like, they don't have legitimate enough pieces to, if they want to stink and sell off and go into a, like, you can't go into a rebuild because you have guys and like Marchand and Pastrnak still here. Like, you've
made rebuild on the fly moves with Hall and Lindholm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Keep things alive and bolster depth.
Mm-hmm.
Trading Marchand is the white flag.
Nixes that, absolutely.
The white flag. Sure, you could get a ton for Brad Marchand, even at 34 years old, but it's not worth it to me. It's just not.
That's why all the people that are entertaining it, I'm like, why?
David Pastrnak happy. There's a chance you can bring David Krejci back. So, you know, if you
I don't want to go down that rabbit hole again.
It could happen. I'm not counting on it, but it's, you know,
we sat here and did that last year too.
Like, this is a little different. If Pastrnak can go to the World Championships and sell Krejci on coming back, they can get on the phone with Sweeney. You can sell him on playing with Marchand and Pastrnak or Hall and Pastrnak. You might get David Krejci back. I'm just putting it out there. Am I counting on it happening? No, I'm not.
Nope, I'm not.
But I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just not doing it. There's a lot. There's a lot going on as it segues us into, you know, breakup day notes, stuff like that. always, you know, it's a sucky day, but it's always interesting. You know, you find out, you know, things that have been bothering certain players throughout the playoffs. Mm-hmm. The Bruins, I think every year we have some interesting ones. You know, they have a lot of guys that battle through injuries. To start, though, you know, outside of the injuries and stuff, Jakub Zboril signed a 2-year contract extension at $1.1375 million average annual value on Monday morning. If, you know, you don't remember, he tore his ACL against Nashville on December 2nd, 10 games into the season. Brutal. Happy to see him back.
Yep.
This reinforces the fact that the Bruins are going to trade a defenseman. I think that's
a
foregone conclusion.
Yep.
And they need the cap flexibility, not just immediately, but it just helps you for the future too. You know, you got to help accommodate Pastrnak's contract extension. Lindholm's getting a raise over like the 2.6. I think they had him with the salary retained. McAvoy's getting a raise. You know, Carlo's got that, you know, contract over the next few years where he got a raise from. You gotta make lateral cap moves to make things happen. And Zboril's $1.1375 million average annual value is much less than Mike Riley's $3 million. And if you were to trade Matt Grzelcyk, which I'm doubting, he makes just over 3.6. So that's quite the discount. And I like it. I like the move. I think it's in Zboril's best interest to stick around versus testing the free agent market, unless there was like a super interested suitor, of course. But he took the safe route, and his agent was probably like, hey, like, you know, you got things going here. Stick around. Earn your spot. You know, you did it last year. You can do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And just battle and make a case for yourself. And your next contract, whether that's with the Bruins again or with someone else in the open market, you can cash in and you can, you know, hopefully for his sake, stay healthy. You know, as he spoke, you know, he was with his girlfriend when he found out. He was very emotional when he found out it was a torn ACL. And he's a guy that's not like a loud, like boisterous guy. I can imagine, you know, he's a little more on the sensitive side, and that bothered him, and you know, reasonably so. Yep. But he's got a lot of time to recover. You know, he's not fully 100% yet. He was kind of talking about like certain types of movements still don't feel 100% comfortable, but he's been skating for a while. So he's, you know, making the road to recovery. I'm happy for Zboril. If he were to walk and go somewhere else and, you know, whatever happened, it just would have stunk. It was a guy that got a lot of criticism for so long. You know, he takes that type of stuff personally. He said
he turned a corner this year too in those first 10 games. Absolutely did.
And for him to leave after this, you know, good for him if he were to get his money. But I'm happy that it's not ending on a torn ACL for him.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can help a guy like Brandon Carlo.
Yep.
I think a huge priority for this team has to be getting Brandon Carlo back on track, whether it's Jack Eichel or Jakub Zboril. Those are the two guys I want playing with Brandon Carlo.
Mm-hmm.
I like Matt Grzelcyk, dude, but Matt Grzelcyk's in a tough spot right now. He's got the surgery that could keep him out to the start of next season. And to be honest, I don't want to see that pairing together next year.
No, that pairing has – that ship has sailed. Like,
and
I think
the thing for Grzelcyk, too, is – and for Riley, Forbert and Clifton are a great third pair.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be tough to break them up. You don't really have any real reason to break up Lindholm and McAvoy unless you want to put Lindholm with Carlo and Grzelcyk with McAvoy to try to get him going, because we've seen that be elite together.
Yeah,
but I think you ultimately, in an ideal world, acquired Hampus Lindholm to take the pressure off of McAvoy, the defensive core as a whole, and give McAvoy a really like formidable partner. So you got that defensive conundrum that they need to sort out. And I think right now the most logical option is to trade Mike Riley.
Okay. I just don't see. Yeah, I mean, at first I would have said, you know, maybe Grzelcyk's time is done here, but like now with the injury stuff, it's there's not going to be any trade value, I don't think.
I think there's going to be plenty of trade value. Even with the injury, I think he has more trade value than Mike Riley. To some GMs, it's it's going to kind of be like hot or cold. I bet you there are some GMs that love Mike Riley. Because both defensemen, you know, Grzelcyk tails off in the playoffs a little bit, but they have really good, like, puck, you know, puck moving transition metrics. Grizzlick's got great defensive metrics, believe it or not. Some people might not, you know, might be surprised by that. They've got a lot, you know, to offer in terms of value. And, you know, their Grzelcyk contract is reasonable. I think a lot of teams will be fine with it. Riley's contract is reasonable if, you know, if he can not take penalties for six straight games.
that'll hurt you.
Yeah, and the big thing for Riley, too, I'm not going to say Riley's going to request a trade, but he was not happy when he got taken out of the lineup for Lindholm. You know, it was reasonable. Obviously, you know, I bet he knew in the back of his mind, he's like, all right, they traded a lot for Lindholm. Like, if I have to sit, whatever. But I don't blame him for not sitting well, that it was him that had to sit.
Yeah.
He knows he's a capable defenseman. He's not always a capable defenseman, but
more so than not, yeah.
It's like... And I think you have a better case for trading Riley. I think Grizzlick will have more value to the teams with, you know, good analytics departments, but and you know, just teams in general, because I think at the ceiling, Matt Grizzlick is a much better defenseman than Mike Riley is. I think that a good team, Mike Riley is a third pairing defenseman. And with the right defensive partner, Matt Grizzlick is a second, third pairing, maybe top pairing. You're not your most ideal top pairing with any team. We've seen it top pairing with McAvoy, how good he can be. It's kind of an enigma, especially after this season, you know, he's with his struggles. They need to find a way to get Brandon Carlo right, because if, you know, they were to make the playoffs next year and Brandon Carlo is still struggling, you know, he had moments at times throughout this playoffs, you're not going anywhere. If your second pairing is that weak and that
you're in trouble,
mistakes and catastrophe, you're in trouble. And you have to explore Zboril and or Sean on that pairing. It's just
can only help. It has. Can't imagine it hurts. Yeah.
It has to happen at this point. I don't want Mike Riley in that pairing, but I'd honestly prefer him over Grizzlick, to be honest with you. Because Grizzlick and Carlo just don't work. You got to find a good spot for Grizzlick, ideally. And it's going to be tough, too, because you, more realistically, you're going to probably have to break up the third pairing if you're going to want to do it. And that's not ideal. But Forbert and Grizzlick is a combination I don't think anybody's really speculated on, but I think Grizzlick could be fine on the right side. Lower, you know, intensity minutes. But, you know, Clifton's connection with Forbert makes things dicey. You have Zboril who can play on the right side too, and he did fine there. It's a whole mess that they need to sort out, and we'll see what happens with trades and stuff as we go along. But the interesting thing about that too is I think Derek Forbert played himself into an untouchable defenseman, which might sound crazy, but the thing that people are forgetting about with Derek Forbert is he has a no trade clause, and why would he waive it?
That's true.
So that's what makes him untouchable, on top of the fact that he really stepped up in the playoffs and was overall not too bad this year. Like, I was pretty pleased with Derek Forbert this year. There were times where I was terrified earlier in the season by Derek Forbert.
That first line pairing was not something that worked out well in the slightest, but
I don't think Derek Forbert's going anywhere. I don't know if there's anybody who's in the camp like, oh, don't trade Grizzly Corrali, trade Forbert. He's not going anywhere to me. That it's still kind of baffling to me that he got no trade clause. It was confusing from the start, but whatever. The defense is a mess right now, kind of. Not in the worst way possible in terms of, you know, everybody sucking or anything, but they got a lot of questions to answer. And good for Zboril here. We also saw Johnny Beecher sign an entry-level deal. He signed an ATO after Michigan got eliminated, and played a little bit with Providence. Looked pretty good down there. I'm saying right now Johnny Beecher's in the mix for the fourth and third line next year, but we'll see. I think his speed at his size is good enough to make him at least serviceable and worth a shot. Whenever at any point in the season, could be early, could be mid-season, I think Johnny Beecher deserves a look unless he were to go to the AHL to start and really struggle or something. But he gets his entry-level deal, well-deserved. I'm excited for Johnny Beecher. To me, he's kind of like a smoother, more refined Sean Corrali that's bigger and has more offensive upside. Not like superstar offensive upside. That's not what I'm trying to get at, but like a third line, probably winger, you know, natural center, but probably winger with his size. And, you know, maybe he ends up being a center, you know, given the lack of prospect depth, we'll see. But I think he could be a really effective winger, get in on the forecheck, you know, play hard, bang bodies. Once he locks into that kind of mode as a winger, I think he could be a really, really, really effective one in the bottom six. So I'm excited to see what Johnny Beecher does next season. I think a lot of people were kind of down on him due to lack of production at times at Michigan and injury troubles, but I don't know. I wouldn't rule out Johnny Beecher yet. I think he has a chance to be a really good bottom six forward. Whenever that may be, you know, is to be determined. But on to the breakup day stuff of injuries and all that jazz. David Pastrnak, he had a tough breakup day. He's been dealing with injury stuff all season, and he was asked about just how taxing the season was on him, you know, with the unfortunate death of his son. It's just like a position you don't want to see anyone in.
Mm-hmm. He said that himself, yeah, that he wouldn't obviously wish it on anybody.
It's just brutal.
Mm-hmm.
The fact
kudos that for the guy going out. Sorry to cut you off, but kudos for him going out and playing pretty much a full season, like with the weight of that on him, and not really showing it up until this moment. Like,
yeah, and he easily could have like completely broken down.
Yeah, absolutely.
The fact that he kept himself composed shows how strong he is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just still to this day, and it'll never not be, just like a very heartbreaking scenario.
Yep.
And just something, like you never wish on anybody, because it's a nightmare. And man, did he battle adversity this year and still scored 40 goals.
That's, still a wild thing. Yep.
Lots of flashes of the Pasternak we know and love, the elite goal scorer. And he's had some injury troubles as well. The core muscle injury that nagged him mainly later in the season, but throughout the year. Excuse me. He tore cartilage during the Bees' visit to Winnipeg on March 18th and played through it for 3 weeks before re-aggravating it against Columbus. He went on to miss Boston's 10 of Boston's final 13 games due to injury. He said, "It's all right, to be honest. It's tough at the end through the game four, but I got healthy. I feel all right now. It's just the tweaking the whole 3 weeks every day pretty much until the Columbus game that I kind of tore the cartilage or something. It was no fun, but I'm feeling all right, actually. At the end of the playoff series, I'm feeling fine." And now we know he's fine enough to play for the Czech Republic in the World Championship. So hopefully he doesn't re-aggravate it. That would really just make me sad. Mm-hmm. But he's playing with David Krejci. Please convince him to come back. And what could have been the top six center of the future if he didn't sign an extension in Tomáš Hertl. That will always hurt me. Hull, Hertl, and Pasternak would have been...
That would have been ridiculous, yeah. Oh,
dude, like, good night. Like, good night. But yeah, I mean, Pasternak, luckily, will not require surgery during the offseason, which is good. You know, we have some guys, one guy we know will be getting surgery, one who might. But, you know, it was a tough year for Pasternak. I have so much freaking respect for him. Like,
absolutely. Yep.
Through the roof. But yeah, we'll see what happens with him. The other thing with him is a contract extension. He's a free agent after next season. $6.67 million is not going to be the price tag next time.
No, it's not.
You're looking at 10. 10 minimum, maybe 11 for David Pasternak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could want to wait and see how the season goes, you know, get a more firm number locked in as the season goes along. Maybe he ends up wanting to test the free agent market. I don't really see why he'd want to leave at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to, you know, want to test the free agent market, my gut feeling, but it's possible. You know, some guys want to just see what's out there, then circle back and end up signing with their original team. So we'll see what happens, but it seems like a contract extension is a priority for the Bruins, and hopefully they can get it done before next season.
Because
that would be tremendously ideal, just given what he wants. Like, you don't want to let David Pasternak slip away. That's not a good business practice. Just truly isn't. I don't know if it's too early for this or if you put much thought into it, but what's an ideal number for you for David Pasternak? You know, money per year. I'm hoping 10.5. I think if you get 10.5, that's fine.
Yeah, I'd probably put it somewhere around that 10, like 10 and a half in that range. 10.3, like, yeah,
something like that.
Like 10.25, maybe. Like,
I think you could get 11, honestly, but I don't know. If you can get him under 11, then I think that's real good value.
Okay. Yeah, I'd probably put it at like 10.25, somewhere around that. Like, yeah. Like, I mean, he's already signed one team-friendly deal for the most part, so I don't know if, again, like, you get a Bogart situation where the Bruins think they could maybe get him to sign another one, and Pasternak doesn't want to do that. But, like, and I have to say, he doesn't strike me as a guy that, like, is just out there to play for money. Like, he strikes me as a guy that, like, again, like, situation, if, you know, he'll try to figure something out that works well for both sides. Like,
I don't know if you remember his comments in the past, like, where he's like essentially talking about, I don't have the exact quote in front of me right now, that money is not really a thing for him. Like, it doesn't, like,
it's a guy that would rather play than,
which has me comfortable about him not testing the free agent market. Something drastic would have to happen, I think, for him to test the free agent market.
Well, I think Bergeron this offseason might determine that. If you can't get him back next year, then Pasternak would just say, yeah, I'm going to go out and test and see what happens. Like, if there's a team that's in a better spot, then the Bruins would be a year removed from Bergeron if we get to that. Like, if he might Bergeron, just say, I'll
get Krejci back. Maybe
yeah, that's the big thing with me for Krejci is I know that probably the talk of him is going to ramp up more and more as the offseason goes on. And I have to assume the Bruins don't do the same thing they did last offseason. Can we get a decision on David Krejci at the start of free agency instead of maybe not tailoring your whole offseason to figure out if David Krejci comes back or not? Because I think that's kind of what the trap the Bruins fell into last offseason and then ultimately kind of screwed themselves over in that sense. But like, right now, like I'm kind of tired of hearing about the David Krejci stuff, but if they can figure something out with him sooner rather than later, then I might be more in inclined to, you know, having David Krejci come back.
Yeah, I think Krejci would come back cheap if he comes back 1 year at a time, maybe just 1 year total, probably just 1 year total. Yep. He looks good in the Czech league, obviously, as he should. He's like arguably the best player in that league, if not like top three. And he's looked good in the world championship so far. So that's encouraging. The money thing with Pastrnak, if there's one reason to believe Pastrnak takes another team friendly deal, you know, it's not going to be $6.67 million. Maybe you get him under 10 somehow, is the fact that, you know, he's publicly commented that money's not a huge thing to him. So maybe, you know, he wants to make something work that's going to be beneficial to the team and help get him his first cup, because that's got to be,
that would be nice. That would be dope.
But there's so many factors that go into it, as we've kind of expanded on a little bit. He talked about how it was like an honor to wear, you know, an A as an alternate captain, rotating in and out with McAvoy and Carlo. Talking about the leaders on the team and, you know, before me, and, you know, wanting what Bergie does for them, and, you know, everybody wants to be like him. Very cool to see Pastrnak, you know, talk about that as well. Matt Grizzlick, another guy who's been playing through the pain. The scratch was, I think, partially due to how he had been struggling, but I'm not surprised to see that he has been dealing with some injury troubles, because he had so many of these like minor injury flare ups where, you know, he's like game time decision day to day. He had a bad string of like injury luck this season in particular. And, you know, we've seen him get hurt at times in the past, but this year in particular, my God, the guy just couldn't catch a break. And he's going to get surgery on his dislocated right shoulder and probably miss start of next season. So it's it makes things dicey for Grizzlick.
I would say so.
But we'll see what happens. We'll see how it affects his trade value if they gauge the market on him. But it goes back to the conundrum they have. We'll monitor that as the season goes along. He said it was quite difficult not feeling like myself, obviously, pain-wise. It was popping in and out. That's why I would have to miss a game or two for a way for it to calm down. Unfortunately, I have to get surgery, but looking forward to getting healthy again and start feeling like myself. Hopefully Grizzly can get back to his normal self, because we know what he's capable of at the top of his game. Very good, underrated defenseman. This is another thing. This is what I was looking for. He actually had surgery on his other shoulder when he was at BU. So, yeah, he's got shoulder issues.
Lucky him, yeah.
New thing. Hopefully, you know, it can be resolved with the surgery. So we'll see what happens with that. Brad Marchand, another guy struggling a little bit on the injury front. Will he get surgery? Maybe. But he hurt his AC joint, he said, in a collision again with Washington's Garnet Hathaway on January 20th. Originally expected to miss a couple weeks, but did not miss any games. They were able to manage it, you know, because he's just a beast too. He might get surgery if it's like a this season or next off season type of thing. Just do it now. Just get it.
I didn't understand that comment when I was like, why would you wait?
Get it over,
like, please. Because I would have to assume this is what kind of featured in his goalless drought throughout the season, like some sort of little flare up here. So, like, why would you risk that happening again and then obviously risk a larger injury waiting to get the surgery? Like,
exactly. It's not feasible to me. Mm-hmm. There's no upside to it, like zero. And I hope they come to that conclusion, because wouldn't be great if it led to something bad during the season if they held off the surgery. Hampus Lindholm, another guy we've known has dealt with, you know, some injury troubles. He missed 9 of the final 13 games. Then it was a lower body injury, which he revealed to be a knee suffered against Detroit on April 5th. And this confirmed that, you know, in the playoffs, he did suffer a concussion. But They got it back in time safely. He looked comfortable when he came back, which was good. I think it's easy for guys who are coming off a concussion to, you know, be a little timid at the start, and he wasn't. So that's encouraging, you know, for a guy you've got locked up long-term now. Hopefully Hampus Lindholm has better injury fortunes next season, because it kind of screwed up his like comfortability at times, I think. And, you know, he can get the ball rolling next year. But another one, a funny one in a way, you know, not encouraging this type of things, but, you know, Charlie McAvoy kind of went David Pastrnak with the chipped front tooth from a high stick, but he's getting it fixed as soon as he can. Pastrnak kind of pushed off for a little while. It's funny how Derek Forbert finished with 8
shot this blocks, was, yeah.
And he had 9 of them in one game, and I was there. That was pretty funny. Suffered from no ill effects, and he talked about how his
dog, unbelievable.
And he talked about how his dog, who he loves, his dog Darla, like, he gets all the good Boston food on the streets when they're walking, which is funny. Mm-hmm. He's such a goofball. For anybody who doesn't know, just look up Derek Forbert's Instagram. It's hilarious. Like, he posts some goofy stuff. He's got quite the personality. Jake DeBrusk, one of the bigger storylines this offseason is Jake DeBrusk, you know, as we know, not traded. He's excited to head home to Edmonton. And he said he hasn't thought about the trade request much. It's been nice not thinking about it since the trade deadline. He's been spending a lot of time with the boys here these past 2 days. I'll go home and talk through it with my family and go over the year more thoroughly. Kind of distracted on that. I haven't thought about it. You know, he did sign that contract extension. He also mentioned, you know, I wouldn't have signed something if I wasn't okay with that. It was a crazy circumstance around the time. I was excited to sign that. I think that's when my game took off as well, like I said. I haven't had to answer these questions for a while, so I think that's when my game turned around. Embrace his role with Bergeron and Marchand. And, yeah, I mean, that helps. That helps you get to 25 goals. The interesting thing, he said it doesn't have any bearing on his decision. I'm not calling Jake DeBrusk a liar here, but, like, I think that kind of has some bearing on his decision in the back of his mind. And I think his dad talking about it with him would be like, hey, dude, like, if you want to stay and you can play with Marchand and Bergeron, that's pretty sick. You should
probably stay, yeah. See, my big thing with this, and like the couple comments now that I have in the outline, you have it in the link to the article that talks about everything, like the couple times he's commented about, like, it's nice not to think about the trade stuff. You know, I haven't thought about the trade stuff. You know how you don't have to think about or talk about the trade stuff in the first place?
How, Ryan?
Never complain and never have a trade request in the first place. This has been the biggest problem with me and DeBrusk the whole season. Like, we talked about it when it happened that the trade request came out. And we were both like, what merit are you going off a trade request for? Like, there's been times you legitimately have deserved to have been benched because you just, there's stretches. It's the Jake DeBrusk experience. There's stretches where he legitimately vanishes out there. So, like, it's just, again, it's kind of falling back to me. It's like he put himself in this spot with everyone, the questions about the trade stuff, and then obviously with the trade deadline coming and going and him still being here. Like, all this stuff can be avoided if you just kind of, I don't want to say grow up, because I don't think he's being childish with this, but, like, you get where I'm coming from. Like, don't put yourself in this kind of position in the first place to then now have to, you know, explain yourself and answer these questions, you know, have this kind of gray cloud of uncertainty looming over your head of what his future is going to hold here. Because, again, like we talked about it too, when the extension happened, like, I still think it's an extension that looks favorable for another team. Like, I just, to put it out there, I don't think he's going to be here next year. I think it's kind of a foregone conclusion for me that he's probably going to get dealt. Like, they have to shake. I just, this whole offseason, I think something has to be shaken up. Like, you have to make some sort of move and do something. I think he's going to probably have to be an unfortunate casualty of that. Like, he's going to be one of the first guys that goes, I think.
The interesting thing with the cap space, you know, how they want to manage it too, is, you know, there's been the idea of Nick Foligno being bought out, thrown out there, trading Mike Riley for like a draft pick. Look, they didn't bench Nick Foligno all year. I don't think they're going to buy him out. I think they're going to ride this out.
They can't keep doing this too. Like, they can't keep bringing in all these old guys and then 2 years later buying him out. Like, with Backus, with him.
You can't say no to Bergeron. He confirmed this on Spit and Chicklets 2 weeks ago. Bergeron wanted him.
When that happens, like, that's, yep.
But, you know, if there's one flaw in someone flying Patrice Bergeron, it's wanting Nick Foligno here.
Bad decision making when it comes to player personnel. Don't be a GM in your retirement.
I like what Nick Foligno brings to the defensive zone. His defensive metrics were good this year. He works hard in the defensive zone, but his offense has been declining. His speed is not there. His hard work is. His puck handling is not there. He was clumsy at points late in the season, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's not a reliable player at this point. Mm-hmm. And if he were to hit the open market again this year, he would struggle to get like $1.2 million, I think. Like, he's just not – he's not worth $3.8 million. And that's
not even close.
You have to consider a buyout. You know, if he wants a better situation, too, he could waive his no-trade clause. Maybe that ends up being a thing where he's like, you know, it's whatever. Like, he's a guy that gets it. He gets the game. Mm-hmm. Anything I hear about Nick Foligno, he understands. He understands. Like I said last week, if he were to have been taken out of the lineup to help the team's chances, he probably would have been fine with it because he gets it. He's been around. You know, I'm sure he knows deep down he's not the player he used to be as well. But the interesting thing with, you know, potentially getting a draft pick for Jake DeBrusk too is not having to take out any salary, which makes
sense. Yeah, that would be good.
And the Bruins, it's no secret, they don't have the best prospect group. It's getting better. They've had some good recent drafts, but there's still a lot we don't know about how those guys will turn out. So we can't say for sure that they're home runs yet. So I'm just saying, don't rule out the idea of them getting a second in a prospect, a second in a fourth or whatever, fucking a late first round pick from someone for Jake DeBrusk. Because I think it's possible. But I think Sweeney is going to exhaust all options to get an NHL player back. Or at least like a fringe, like really good prospect. Mm-hmm. Like a guy that could, you know, kind of on the fringe of being an NHL player. Maybe you get a guy like that. Who knows? There's options more so than some people might think. Some people might think it's open and shut, an NHL player. I think that's the most likely thing, but I'm not saying a draft pick is impossible. And I think some teams would consider a first-round pick. Some people will probably think I'm an idiot.
Call one of those teams up then, if that's the case.
I mean, let's just look at it real quick. You know, these pick spots aren't finalized, but like teams with late picks. Montreal has a late pick from Calgary. Arizona has two late first-round picks. They had interest in Jake DeBrusk when he requested a trade. Buffalo.
That's true. Yep, good
it's
point.
It's a possible spot for DeBrusk. Florida traded their pick to Buffalo. Toronto, doubtful. Minnesota, doubtful. Unless you were to swing a Kevin Fiala trade somewhat, but I don't know if the Bruins could fit that because Kevin Fiala is due for a raise. And Kevin Fiala shit his pants in the first round of the playoffs and pretty much did nothing. So I don't know if I really want him. I've heard murmurs from the Cold Stove podcast that he's kind of got an ego too, and I don't really want
that type of guy. Definitely don't want that here, yeah.
Don't want that. The Rangers, I think, are a very logical fit for Jake DeBrusk. They have their late first round pick. Tampa Bay, doubt it. St. Louis, maybe if they can make it fit. Edmonton, he's from Edmonton.
That would work.
Pittsburgh, I could absolutely see Jake DeBrusk on Pittsburgh. Washington, probably not. L.A., maybe. You know, I don't think, you know, L.A. is looking at like a just around mid-first-round pick. I don't know if a team would give up a first-round pick that high. But like 24 range down, like 22, 23, 24, I think it's possible. And if the Bruins, you know, were able to get like the 22nd overall pick from whoever – and throw in like a little sweetener just to get it, like whatever that may be, they could get a first round pick for Jake.
Could do that, yeah, absolutely.
Just putting it out there, and that's like an easier way to get cap space off and get a valuable asset than attaching an asset to Nick Foligno and trading him to Arizona or New Jersey or Detroit or whoever, Seattle, and potentially having to deal with him not wanting to move his no trade clause, anything else that might come up. Another interesting thing, good thing that. Brad Marchand's injury wasn't a hip abductor injury, because every time I hear of a hip adductor, I always think it's abductor. And I'm glad nobody abducted his hip, because that would not be good. The funny thing with Pastrnak too is like he literally said to the media, says he tore cartilage or whatever in his chest. Like he's like, yeah, I don't know. Like,
they didn't know. Yeah.
Pretty much like, I don't know, man. Like
that's not what it's not my cool. specialty. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not.
It hurts. It hurts. Donnie Del Negro.
I mean, that game was Donnie Del Negro's last. Shout out to a legend and a very well-respected guy in the training staff. And I'm sure around the league, it's really cool to see them give him the golf cart. Tough way for him to go up, but a guy that showed a lot of loyalty to the Bruins and the Bruins love for a long time. Shout out to Donnie Del Negro. Best of luck in retirement. Other things, no talks with David Krejci at this time. Said Don Sweeney, though, said if he wanted to return, they would talk about it. It's a hypothetical at this point. So we'll leave it at that. some guys to not expect back next year. We'll talk, this is another discussion topic we'll discuss as the season goes on. I think it's safe to say Anton Bleed is gone. He said
I would agree with you.
He didn't sign here to play in the press box. He mm-hmm. deserves opportunity elsewhere too. The Bruins.
Yeah, I don't blame him for that mindset in the slightest.
Him. I love Anton Bleed, but he'll have a market for himself and he'll be a good fourth liner somewhere.
Yep.
It just stinks that it had to end this way. Josh Brown's not coming back. I'd be seriously shocked if Josh Brown comes back.
I liked that guy for one game and he sucked regardless of everything else.
And he was just kind of invisible. He wasn't as bad as I thought he would be. He just didn't do much. He's just kind of there.
Yeah, just one of those guys.
Curtis Lazar.
Long losing, for the ride.
Likely losing Curtis Lazar stinks, but it's one of those things. The Bruins have been okay with letting fourth liners walk. Nola Chari, Sean Corrali, Tim Schaller, so on and so forth. Riley Nash.
Do you think he's gone, though? I thought I saw somewhere that there was... Yeah, Ty Anderson said there was mutual interest.
I think you're looking at like $1.5 million per if you're bringing Lazar back, but I think in the open market, he could get close to two or just over two. Look, I think Curtis Lazar's best interest, you know, he wants to stay here, but I think it's going to end up him testing the market and getting a nice payday somewhere else. Maybe he gets like Sean Corrali money. Maybe he gets 2.5 over like anywhere from 2 to 4 years. Corrali got four and no trade clause somehow, but he's a king.
So insane.
Hometown boy gets it from his hometown team. Gotta love it. Look, Lazar's going to have a good market for himself. And the Bruins have Oscar Steen. They have Mark McLaughlin.
Plenty of options. You have to replace him. Options.
Fabian Lysell, obviously not ideally on the fourth line, but a right winger. Curtis Lazar plays right wing. He'll be in the mix, I think, at some point next season, speaking of Lysell. I mean, they got him as technically a throw-in in the Hall deal, and they got a lot of value out of him. So that's what they can take out of it. I'm going to miss Lazar, not only because he's a wrecking ball, but I love that big, goofy smile he always wears. He gets all excited, like, jumping around after goals. I think that's hilarious. I think the Bruins have kind of, like, established a tradition of that. Like, Krug used to do that. Like, Wagner used to do little, like, shimmies dancing. Like, Howla does it. Marchand's done, like, the McGregor thing. I love that type of shit. Foligno does it every once in a while. McAvoy. It's really funny. And I love the smile he brings. He seems like a really positive guy. And I think any team that can afford to slot him into the fourth or even the third line on the right team will benefit from it because he's a hard worker. He's a positive guy. And I think his best option is to go somewhere else because not – that he couldn't be good if he returned, but I don't know. I just don't think it's a smart move if they bring him back. Again, nothing against the player, but they have guys that can step in. They need to prioritize cap space, and they've let fourth liners walk in the past. I'm leaning towards Lazar playing elsewhere, but I'm going to miss him. I really am. Like I said, just got out of my meeting with Sweens. I think there's mutual interest. I love playing here. I love being a Boston Bruins City fans organization. They've all been great to myself and my family, and I want to be back here. But again, there's other parts. There's the business side. I mean, we will see what happens. Sweden said he would be upfront and honest about it, and our people will be in touch, so we'll see what happens. What you kind of expect from a classy player in that situation.
Yep.
All class from Curtis Lazar. Going to miss him, but I think he will play elsewhere. Chris Wagner is another guy that could be in the mix next year. Maybe he reclaims the fourth-line right wing spot. We'll see what happens with Wagner, but he is entering the final year of his contract. Maybe he is traded for an opportunity elsewhere. We'll see what happens with Wagner. I really hope they don't buy him out because I love him. I would hate to see him bought out. That's the end of it. But we'll see what happens with Wagner next year. He seemingly became okay and dealt with the experience of being in the AHL. He was talking about how he was kind of like the Bergy of the team, he felt like, which was kind of funny, and I guess it makes sense because he's on the older side.
Yeah, he's the elder statesman. Yep.
Yeah, he's the elder statesman. Whatever happens with Wagner, dude, I hope it just goes well for him because he's such an easy guy to root for. I miss his appearances on, what was it, like Toucher and Rich he used to go on?
He was on, I think he was so Zolak funny. And Bertrand.
Zolak and Bertrand.
He was, right. Yeah, because so they replaced him with Derek Forbort this year.
Oh, that's just a great replacement with how goofy he is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, I just hope things go well for Wagner wherever it ends up, wherever he ends up, whether it's.
I think DeBrusque was Toucher and Rich, if I remember.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, go driving to Merrimack in the mornings for morning classes. Yeah, listening to them. It was DeBrusque. Yep.
Always funny stuff. But anything else as I'm reading through things? Yeah, I talked about Forbort's dog. That was the last point there. Shout out to Eric Russo for putting all those thoughts together on Bruins' website. Now we're on to Don Sweeney's notes, and a lot of people were a lot more critical of these ones because there are a lot of people that don't like Don Sweeney, believe it or not. To put this out there, I'm indifferent with what happens with Don Sweeney. I don't think it's the end of the world if he gets a new contract. But I'm not screaming for him to be fired. But I think with the inevitable rebuild, whether it's this year, it really starts, you know, getting up and going, or next year, or 2 years from now, if Bergeron really wants to just keep going at it, if he wants to pull a Sidney Crosby, because Sidney Crosby said after they were eliminated, he's got 3 more years minimum.
I did not hear that.
Yep, he said that.
Dark days are coming in Pittsburgh.
Well, I mean, 3 years is good, though. Like,
true, but like, it's, I feel like that's going to come quick.
They're looking at losing probably Chris Letang, though, potentially. I don't think they'll lose Malkin. Yeah, I don't know, man. I think it's really hard to justify, you know, the Jacobs family. They do things their own way. But, you know, I don't always agree with the things they do. I don't think you can do a rebuild or go through the future with Don Sweeney at GM. You need a fresh face. You need fresh faces.
Yep.
I'm not saying like Cam Neely, you know, everybody, but you need some fresh ideas. And, you know, Don Sweeney's made good moves. He's made bad moves. You need some new ideas. You need something different, because what you're doing is, you know, you got to the Cup Finals in 2019, but it's not working well enough. And maybe that comes with the coaching change as well. We talked about that earlier, but I'm not screaming for Bruce Cassidy to be fired. I'd be happy if he's back. I don't think he'll be fired if I were to take one side.
I think that was more likely
got to get fired.
Yeah. Yep. 100%. That was, if you have to choose one of the two guys, like, and that's
why his contract is up.
I didn't know his contract was up. So that, let go is the more suitable thing at this point. But, like, that's why when so many people were calling for Bruce Cassidy's head, I'm like, how about you look like – I'll always kind of argue that, you know, the coach can only coach the players he's given. Like, it's kind of the spot the Red Sox are in right now. Like, Alex Cora is doing the best he can with the crap he has. Like, not to say that the Bruins, you know, were crap this year. Obviously, they made the playoffs. But, like one's got to go. It's probably going to be Don Sweeney. Like, you can look at the offseason additions, the contracts that were given out. Drafting, obviously, over, like you said, it's gotten better, but like there have been some pretty bad drafts. Like he's the odd man out, if you're asking me, if a move has to be made.
Yeah, it has to be. I've been hot or cold on Sweeney for a while, you know, or like 2 or 3 years ago, I was like very, not like staunchly supporting Don Sweeney, but I was in like the pro Don Sweeney camp, but it's kind of like, there's been good over the past
soured a bit.
I'm losing it on him a little bit. And this retool did not work. The defensive retool did not work 2 years ago. You know, the bottom six now this year, it's time.
Not great. It's time. Yeah. Yep.
You need a fresh face. Who? I don't fucking know right now.
It's not my job to pick.
I'm not going to speculate on it right now. I'll say this. I'll speculate on the replacement for Don Sweeney if he is let go.
Exactly.
Not going to do it right now. But I don't know. Maybe I could draw him some ideas, but I'm not going to do it on this show right now. He said, we did not accomplish what we had hoped to do in the course of the season. Only one team does, but we aspire to be that team. We stand here acknowledging that we fell short, which I appreciate him saying, because they did. You know, he said, I think I've been around this town long enough to people to know in terms of pressure, I'm going to lump myself in and hold myself hopefully to the standard of the Boston Bruins. That's why I'm in this job. The Jacobs family, the organization, the history of the Bruins, you know, the standard that we're being held to is exactly what I aspire to. Yeah, it's just like, it's kind of just like what you'd expect a GM in this type of situation to say. I'm not going to run through every quote.
A lot of words, but a lot of
questions.
In the end, still. Yeah.
And he doesn't seem too clear on what's going to happen with Bergeron, rightfully so, but some people are worried about that. Look, I'm worried about Bergeron's future more so because I don't know if he's going to do it, everything physically, not Don Sweeney being able to keep him at the right price or whatever. Look, I think Bergeron will take a reasonable deal if he wants to come back for 1 year at a time. But right now, I'm leaning toward Bergeron retiring.
the way the interviews have been conducted so far, and kind of the tone of his and Marchand getting super emotional at the end of it, like, I mean, there was some good, I guess. He was flat out asked about playing anywhere else, and he, I think his one word answer was no. So I'm glad we can put the I was gonna say the stupid speculation he's gonna go play for the Canadians, because yeah, that's what a 30. What is he? 30? Gonna be 39.
Yeah, the fact that, I mean,
guy wants to do go play for the worst team in the league. Like,
he wasn't a Canadiens fan growing up. He was.
That's what I've been told too by multiple people. So where that came from, I have no idea. Other than like, that, I love how everyone's like, "Oh, his old GM or his old agent went there." So is he's going to go? That like, he's
technically still his agent or not? I don't know what the relationship is like, but
no. But
he's got a big job ahead of him. You know, probably going to take Shane Wright
for sure.
Try and get that team back in shape, but he's got to trade Jeff Petrie probably too, which is going to be a tough task with that contract because he requested a trade during the season. But look, man, I'm leaning towards Bergeron retiring, and the one thing outside of, you know, I think Bergeron knows he can offer a lot to this team. He just had one of the best seasons of his career, so that's the thing that's, you know, holding me back from saying he's absolutely going to retire. Right now, I'd say 55-45 retire. I was 60-40 a couple of days ago. I'm going 55-45 tinkering a little bit. But I hope the thought, you know, with him and his family talking over friends, whatever, teammates, comes to the fact that, dude, like, you're probably going to win the Selke this year. You're so goddamn important to this team. If you can, just please, for the love of God, stay. And I'm echoing this. Bergeron, please. Sweeney, please. Whoever the GM is, please. Just, I want Patrice Bergeron.
Keep it together.
I don't want it to be the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's the end is going to come, but I don't want to want it to happen right now. They made these window extending moves. This team can still make the playoffs next year with, you know, the right team on paper and, you know, on the ice. Bergeron's got a lot left to offer, I think, but he's been through a lot. He's played.
As if he wants to, is more than anything else. Like,
since he was 18, he's been through a lot of injuries. He's 36 now. There's a lot of factors. He's three young kids.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, you know he can. The question is, does he want to? That's going to be the biggest thing. Like, it's kind of the same thing that, you know, still you went with Tom Brady. Like, you know, the guy's still got a shit ton of ability left. It's just, does he want to hang it up and go, you know, be a family man for the rest of his life? And I doubt Bergeron will say he's going to and then come back out of nowhere like Brady did. But, like, it's kind of a similar situation. Two greats at their positions. Like,
yeah. Some other comments. He said, Sweeney said, I'm under contract for right now. I've had a discussion earlier in the year in terms of indication whether what his path will look like, and that will be determined in short order. So I think we'll get a decision soon on what to be done with Don Sweeney. And the Carolina Hurricanes just scored, and that just pissed me off. I want them to lose so badly. Their fans are so goddamn stupid. Like, the one person that is the saving grace, and they're lucky to have her, is Sarah Sivian. Like, she just puts together fantastic content for The Athletic and her podcast. But those people suck. A lot of those people suck. They're so stupid. Those idiots in my mentions. Like, I'm surprised that one idiot isn't like clearly following my tweets, not following me just to come and like try and chirp me in the chat like he did last week. Fucking dork.
How do you think the guy that has James Harden in the Canes jersey feels? Like, the 76ers got bounced from the NBA playoffs, but the Canes are still in the NHL playoffs.
Please give James Harden Supermax. Please give James a Supermax.
How do you think that guy or girl, whatever you're dealing with there, feels?
I don't care, dude. Fucking dork fest.
This idiot.
Fan base. Dork fest in that fan base to defend Tony D'Angelo. Give me a break.
That's, it's a big red flag right there.
Another thing, he spoke about Jake DeBrusk's trade request, and he said, I don't think things have changed, which is interesting because DeBrusk seems undecided. Other than that, he's happier.
Glad we're not on the same page there. That's good.
Yeah.
That's a great look.
What you will. That's all I'm going to leave that at. Make it that what you will. He talked about Fabian Lysell. Fabian Lysell, you know, was signed a few months ago. I don't remember the exact time, so we don't have to worry about, you know, when they're going to sign Fabian Lysell now that Vancouver is out of the WHL playoffs. He's already under his entry-level contract. The interesting thing about Fabian Lysell that I never thought of is potentially moving to center. And Don Sweeney said in response to that, "We have not had discussions internally about him definitively playing center. We do think he has attributes, but at this stage, we are focused on his overall growth and development." I see Fabian Lysell as a winger. If he could turn into a great center, fantastic.
The all set, yeah.
He's a speedy winger with that shot to put in those lethal shooting areas like you see guys like Pastrnak and Marchand doing. So many snipers across the league. He's a winger to me, but the thought of him potentially playing center, given the lack of center depth, it intrigues me.
It's not the worst thing. Yep.
It intrigues me. Something to monitor, I guess, now. Yeah, that pretty much wraps it up for, you know, Sweeney's thoughts. You know, I put Fudo Shinzawa's article in here, but we're not going to read the whole thing. But I just kind of put that into, you know, if anybody has a subscription to The Athletic or has been thinking about it. Fluto wrote an interesting article on who he thinks stays and goes for the Bruins offseason, so check that out. I'm not going to run through the whole thing. We've read through a lot here, but he's got some interesting points, some things I agree with, some things I disagree with. But we shall see what happens, as we've been talking about for a while now, with the offseason. But some good things, you know, with Zboril and Beecher to start, but, you know, a lot of question marks surrounding this team. And, you know, it's not question marks in terms of tons of big-time UFAs or, like, worrying about players getting off sheet or whatever. It's just the big fish in Patrice Bergeron and some other priorities that aren't super, you know, stressful. So
it kind of feels like you're in a similar situation. I was going to say, it kind of feels like you're in a similar situation to, I mean, not maybe as bad, depending on how you look at the positions and the players, but, like, obviously you didn't know. Your offseason kind of hinged on what you did or what David Krejci and Tuukka Rask decided last year. Now your offseason kind of hinges on what Patrice, like, it's a franchise altering player, honestly. Yeah, like, again, like, who knows? Not a great spot to be in year after year, that's for sure.
Look, just don't like it.
It's not fun.
I'm not ruling it out, but I don't like being in this position. It's not fun.
Like, can't imagine the Bruins like it either.
Nope. But we know at least he will never play for anyone else. And to anyone who that's a news flash to, I mean, come on.
Like, the amount of people that were thinking that too, like,
oh my God. Like,
the Montreal thing just blew my mind. Like, yeah, the guy does not want to go play for the worst team in hockey in his final however many years he's left in the league.
People so confident. Oh, he was a Canadian fan. Like, no, he wasn't.
I heard you say that. I heard, I think it was DJ Bean, I think, that said it too. It's like he hated the Canadians growing up. Like,
he's a Nordiques fan, and they're not even a team anymore. Yep. Like, maybe they will be if, you know, Arizona relocates, but I don't know.
And then he'll leave for there.
He'll go to Arizona.
Yeah. And go to Quebec. Another terrible team.
Another terrible fucking team.
Yeah. Horrible.
Just some other names, you know, real quick. Jesper Froden wants to play in the NHL, he said. So I think they signed
him. He's gone too.
I don't think he said that in like a bad way towards the
Bruins. Not in Bleed's way. Not that Bleed said it bad, but like, gotcha.
I get a better opportunity. I think they signed him because they liked what they saw when he was playing the SHL and the World Championships last summer, and they wanted to give him a shot. And now they'll see what happens with him. Cody Curran, who they acquired in the Lindholm trade, all reports look towards him signing with Färjestad BK in the SHL. So good luck to him. He was just a throw-in in the trade, played a few games in Providence. Best of luck to him. Troy Grosnick, low-key important depth piece because he was very good for Providence this year. So if they can keep him around, he's a good AHL veteran. Wouldn't hate that at all. Could see Tyler Lewington and Stephen Fogarty both walking for other opportunities, but guys that seem to be decent, you know, veteran options in the AHL this year. Jack Eshon's a free agent. Happy 25th birthday to him. The fire hydrant. This kid's built like a goddamn fire hydrant. Just look at the thighs on him. him and his brother Grant actually have the same birthday, I found. It's a fun fact. Jackson Eka's a restricted free agent. Guy that could be on the way out via trade, honestly. You know, whether it's packaged with Jake DeBrusk, whether it's packaged with Jake DeBrusk and a defenseman in a big trade.
I
don't see Jack Zanika working out here. Anybody who likes him. I see he's a baby deer out there to me. He bulked up going into the season. Then they updated heights and weights, and he lost all that bulk, it looks like. I don't know what's going
on. Yeah. But somebody's lying somewhere.
Stanika could be a good player. I just don't think it's going to be here. It's not working, and I don't see a real reason that it's going to change. And that sucks because he was a really exciting prospect for a long time, and it's just not working. Just happens sometimes, man. It's not a negative reflection on him. It's not me roasting him. It's just how it is. Cameron Hughes, restricted free agent. You know, if he doesn't sign his qualifying offer or whatever, if he ends up in free agency, I think there's an NHL player in Cameron Hughes. It just depends on the right team to give him the shot. We'll see what happens. But regardless, you're getting a good AHL guy. Yuna Koponen, good big body in the AHL. See what happens with him. Could go elsewhere, could not. Pavel Shen is a restricted free agent, but he's playing in Russia, so we don't really have to worry about Pavel Shen. He's not coming back to the Bruins. Matt Philippe, Northeastern guy, could be re-signed to Providence, could go elsewhere. You know, kind of another one of those guys in that mold. See what happens with him. For all accounts, looks like he had a decent year in the AHL, played a little in the ECHL as well. Nick Wolf, the big Minnesota Duluth defenseman. I imagine he'll stay around. I think the Bruins like having big defense, like a big defenseman or two. They had Chris Breen for a while. Now they got Mike Callahan, who's got some size, and Nick Wolf. I imagine they probably keep him around, but we'll see. Callum Booth, probably gone. Especially if Grossnick stays. You know, I don't know if Callum Booth's going to stick around any longer. I think they can afford to move on and or replace him. And Kyle Kaiser, we'll see what happens with him. Maybe he looks for an opportunity elsewhere, but still a decent young goalie. So that kind of wraps things up for free agent news for anybody who might have forgot about some of those depth guys, free agents. Quick updates on the playoffs. I mean, tail of two teams for the Bruins. We talked about that. The Rangers battle off the pesky injured Pens. The Pens got Jari back in game 7. Didn't matter, though. They lost in OT, thanks to Artemi Panarin. The Rangers kind of squeaked out of that series. You know, they weren't like the overwhelmingly better team the whole time, but they pulled it out. And I just hope they beat Carolina. Tampa outlasts Toronto because, of course, the Hurricanes, not the Hurricanes. The Maple Leafs found some way to lose. Really unfortunate, though, the news about Mitch Marner.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
He's fine. He put out a statement through the Maple Leafs today, so that's good. The reports on, you know, when that or after that happened were that he was okay too. So glad to see nothing
that's good. Yep.
Happened to him, one of the superstars of the league. But yeah, he had his Range Rover stolen at gunpoint. That's pretty scary. So glad he's okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
The defending champs, show why they're the defending champs. They get a big game from Nick Paul, former Ottawa Senator. It's just funny to see an Ottawa Senator knock out the Maple Leafs. Yeah, the Tampa just get it done.
Yep. They know how to win this time of year.
They're a cup mold team. They know how to do it. They know how to do the damn thing. The Panthers beat the 99.5% Tom Wilson-less Washington Caps. He played like one shift, scored a goal, then got hurt and never played again. weird series. One of the weirder timelines I've ever seen for a player in the playoffs in any sports. Carter Verhaeghe. Early Conn Smythe favorite if Florida goes the distance. He was nasty. I think he scored in their last three games of the series. Multiple, if not like two or three game winners, I think. Don't know the exact number. Monster. Former Tampa Bay
Lightning. Pretty solid, yeah.
As well. Monster. They capitalized on him showing, you know, signs of being a great player when he was playing in a lower role and in and out of the lineup in Tampa, and it worked out for him. And look where it's going now. He's top, towards the top of the league in points in the playoffs. Stud. Clutch player, too. Looks like we might have maybe another Justin Williams on our hands. Don't want to get ahead of myself, but this kid's clutch. The Avs somewhat expectedly mopped the Predators. Feel bad for Connor Ingram. David Riddick was given a start in game one, and he sucks, and he sucked in game one. So Connor Ingram had to step in. A guy, you know, no playoff experience, had dealt with some mental health issues at different points over the past 2 years, I believe. So a guy that's, you know, been through a lot of the last 2 years, and he has to step in. Had some great moments, you know, gave them, you know, something to play for in front of their goalie in a tough situation. But the Avs were just too much. The Avs looked pretty damn good. They beat the Blues last night, which makes me happy. Seeing Jordan Binnington really sad after letting up an overtime goal.
Love to see it.
I hope they win in four again. Two straight sweeps of the Blues would be pretty sick. Speaking of the Blues, though, they overpowered the Wild. Kind of what I expected. I expected it to go 7 games, though. Such a shame that we don't get to see more Kirill the Thrill. I just truly love watching him play. He's such a stud. But the Blues were too much. They're very deep. I think their defense is going to hurt them against Colorado, though. the Wild went with a goalie switch in game six and it didn't work. They put Dmitry Kulikov in over Alex Wiligoski and he had a bad game. So not great lineup decisions. They didn't get very balanced scoring. It just wasn't a good formula for the Wild. They said it's been chicklets, I think, since like 2004, Minnesota sports teams in the playoffs were like 31 and like 84.
Oh my God.
The Twins haven't won
a game. I was going to say the Twins helped that a ton. They're like 0-18. Horrible. Yep.
Dude, that is harder to do than like most things you could do as a sports
team. They get mopped up every time in the playoffs. Like they don't put up a fight in the playoffs, which is the even more pathetic thing.
Because they look pretty good, but like, you know, here and there, you know, they've got reasons to get excited, I think, a little bit in Minnesota, but we'll see how that lasts. The Oilers didn't expect them to go to seven, but they outlasted Doughty-less Kings. I'm going to call him Condor McDragon in reference to He Daddy on Twitter. When he called him Condor McDragon, made me laugh so hard. He went apeshit in game seven. He completely took over, like a complete dominant Connor McDavid performance. He was absolutely terrific. And he saved them from being embarrassed again. And that's huge for Edmonton. I'm very happy for Ben Stelter, the kid we talked about last week. He's, you know, been the heartbeat of that team. Just been around them. Awesome to see them, you know, continue to move on here. The Battle of Alberta is going to be awesome. We got the Battle of Alberta and the Battle of Florida after a first round with five game sevens. Playoffs have been pretty fun this year.
I'd say so. Yep.
Pretty fun. That's why they're the best playoffs in sports. Credit to the Kings though. Without Drew Doughty, they take the two of the best players and the Edmonton Oilers. Just seven games. And you know, they're playing with house money. So I mean, Dustin Brown goes out, you know, classy of Jay Woodcroft to congratulate him on a great career after that game. Brown rock star moment, just tweets out a picture of him lifting up the cup after the game. Great career, clutch player. I got a lot of respect for Dustin Brown. Best luck to him in retirement. But the Oilers outlast him, and the Otter, being Jake Oettinger and the Stars, can't douse the flames despite trying. Can't believe this series went seven as well. I had a lot of quick series last round. But the Flames, Johnny Gaudreau, BC legend, ends it. Electric goal. I love that building in the playoffs. It's absolutely crazy. The Flames, a little dicey, but my two cup teams are still alive. Both of them had kind of dicey series, but they're still alive. So we'll see. Jake Oettinger had like a .958 save percentage and like a .154 goals against, and his team lost the series.
And lost.
Jacob Markstrom, very cool, went up to him in the handshake line and says, like, essentially, like, you're amazing. Like,
yeah, he was hyping him up. Off,
which is really cool because Jacob Markstrom had a fantastic year this year, led the league in shutouts. Really cool to see stuff like that because Jake Oettinger is a stud. I remember wanting the Bruins to draft him in his draft year, but they got a pretty good goalie later in that 2017 draft in Jeremy Swayman. So it all worked out. My picks, I got Avs over Blues in round two. In six games, Flames over Oilers in seven. The Battle of Alberta is going to be amazing. I'm going Lightning over Panthers. I'm changing my pick.
Ooh.
I'm changing my pick.
Ouch.
I can't bet against the Lightning. They win game one last night. Andrei Vasilevskiy, after he loses, just doesn't lose again. I think he's like 18-0 or like 17. Maybe he has one loss after losing like in the playoffs in the past few years. I think he's let up one goal in his last five elimination game scenarios. He's the best goalie in the world.
Ridiculous.
Maybe the best goalie of all time in elimination games. Like, he's a moose in the net. It's unbelievable. I don't know. I think they're, you know, Braden Point's injury, you know, whether he can play or not or whatever ends up happening with him, puts things in doubt for the Lightning a little bit, but they just know what to do. They know how to do it. And if they can, you know, not beat the Flames, Panthers handily there. You know, we saw the Panthers lose handily in game one in the first round. I don't know. I'm switching my pick to the Lightning. I think they're going to do it. And I hope I'm wrong for my bracket, but I'm switching to the Lightning. I'm going Lightning over Panthers in six. And then I got Canes over Rangers in six, even though the Rangers, you know, had control of this game and blew it. But Igor Shesterkin should punch someone in the face for that. But
get somebody going.
The Russian gas. But Yeah, I'm going Canes over Rangers in six, which would set up Lightning versus Canes and Avs versus Flames, which would be pretty decent.
Oh God, I hope the Lightning don't win because they're going to the Cup again if they do in that situation.
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong, dude. I really do. I hope my bracket's right about this.
I, unlike you, I'm not flip-flopping on anything. I am standing pat and standing tall. I have Avs over Blues in six, Flames over Oilers in six as well, and then two game sevens in the Eastern Conference. I am sticking with the Panthers over the Lightning. I'm sticking with my Stanley Cup winner to win this series as well. And then Canes over Rangers in seven as well.
Excellent. That's going to wrap it up for hockey. Sure, the playoffs are going to be plenty of fun even with other Bruins. But
they always are. Like you said, the NHL playoffs, I will never debate this with anybody. I agree that they are the best playoffs just for the, obviously, the grueling grind it is to get to the Stanley Cup playoffs as a whole, then to get to the Cup final. Like,
yeah,
it is unmatched anywhere.
Unmatched. Totally agree. Mm-hmm. But it'll be an interesting offseason. We'll have all the coverage for you. So tune in for that and much more. Patriots. Vince Wilfork inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame. Very well deserved.
Big absolutely.
Miss. Complete legend. No disputing it. If you dispute it, argue with the wall.
I feel like he's one of those guys that you like. You probably can't find anybody that dislikes Vince Wilfork.
How
like,
can you?
Unless that's what I mean. Like,
unless you're an opposing quarterback.
Like, yeah, I guess. Yeah, maybe you got crunched up by him. Yeah, exactly. Once or twice. Like, but yeah, I mean, another one. Man. Absolutely. Again, kind of the theme of it, like another pro's pro, like just kind of went about his business. Was wasn't like a badass, like superstar player, but like he was a solid player for as long as he was in the league, you know, did the right thing. Like,
he's a guy that hardly had a bad game.
Like, absolutely. Yeah. You never looked up and was like, oh, what's Vince Wilfork doing out there? Like, what the hell? Like, he always seemed to be right place, right time, knew what to do. Like,
money.
Like, yeah. Like you said, never seen really put on a bad performance.
Yep. Unfortunately, my guy, Derek King.
Yeah. I was released. Thinking of you when I saw this. I'm like, he's going to be devastated. Like, didn't even get a chance.
Look, I wasn't really expecting Derek King to make the roster at the outside shot. You know, they could make him a gadget guy.
They had him as a wide receiver.
I'm just happy he got signed. I've been willing it into existence for 3 years, and it happened, and I can live with that. And I got to be honest, I don't want to trip the guy, but, like, him catching passes, those photos I saw just did not look natural.
I didn't even – that was the only thing I saw on Twitter was that they were trying him out as a receiver. I didn't see anything about how it went or how it looked, but not a great showing from what I understand from you. No, that's unfortunate.
Doesn't seem like it, but
no.
Best of luck to him. Best luck to him. He's a fun player. Liam Shanahan, offensive lineman from LSU, thought this guy might stick around a little longer given the fact that they drafted one of his fellow linemen in Chasen Hines.
Well, they drafted three, so you don't really.
The Marlboro Mass kid does not stick around. He gets released as well. But the main point of discussion for the Patriots, the way too early record predictions, which we love to hear every year, and we revisit more towards the season. A little different than last year, just an early precursor to start the Miami game at Miami, the dreaded game at Miami. That is a huge storyline every year. I'm going with an L.
I am too. I want to get the pick. I mean, this to me, I feel like is more so a toss up than anything else. Cause like, I want to go off a track record. The Patriots always struggle in Miami. It's a given, like Miami's got a new head coach. Like, do they come out and play for him, you know, rah-rah, first game of the season? Do they struggle under a new coach to start the season? I don't know. But, I mean, Miami did make some big changes in the offseason. Obviously, have Tyreek Hill. Patriots still in my book don't have a guy that can cover him. So, as much, you know, as maybe as bad as Tua has looked maybe in training camp, I don't know if you saw those videos and pictures of him underthrowing Tyreek Hill already. Maybe some concern there. But, again, like, it's going to be a long season for the Patriots, as you'll see as we do this. They do not get off on a great foot. I have them losing as well.
Yep. I'm in the same boat on everything. You know, for anybody who might have not noticed too, Miami added to their defense with Melvin Ingram.
That's true. Yep.
So Melvin Ingram had some moments for the Chiefs here and there. I think it'll be a decent, you know, addition to that defense. Mm-hmm. Next up, we have the Pittsburgh Steelers, a team that had an eventful draft on offense. George Pickens, Calvin Austin III, who I loved. He's a speed demon. Kenny Pickett, who could be the starter, could not be if Mitchell Trubisky out muscles him, or Mason Rudolph comes into the mix.
God.
Good Lord.
Yikes.
Maybe if he beat, maybe if he reverses the roles and beats one of them with his helmet. But
yeah. Takes out Mitch Trubisky.
For anybody who didn't see, who doesn't know who Jersey Jerry is, from Barstool, he went out to dinner with Big Cat, also from Barstool, and some friends and stuff with Kenny Pickett. And the first thing he told Kenny Pickett was, Pat Freiermuth is always open. That's the first
so
thing
there you
he
go.
Told him.
Yep.
He was talking about the menu like, selection was like,
thank you, good to know.
Confidence and that content was fantastic. I'm
absolutely
forward.
Was.
I hate the Steelers, I truly do. I don't hate Jersey Jerry, I don't hate Kenny Pickett, but I'm truly looking forward to the Jersey Jerry Kenny Pickett content in the future. It's going to be spectacular. He actually talked about it some more on Part of My Take today when he did a segment with them. Oh my God, it's so funny. But the Steelers. I have them beating the Patriots in week two. I think TJ Watt obviously is going to be a massive problem. I saw today his cap number this year is like under 5 million, which I don't know. Like, how is that even possible?
That's, yeah. That seems like a crime. Like,
it's crazy. I think, you know, it'll depend on the QB play. It'll depend on how the line holds up, but I think Najee Harris could cause some problems. George Pickens and Calvin Austin could be contributors right away. Hard to kind of say right now. Claypool and Deontay Johnson will be tasked with, you know, filling the void of left by Juju Smith-Schuster. Gunnar Olszewski's in the mix. Gunnar Olszewski revenge game.
I forgot he went there, yep.
They added Anthony Miller from Chicago. They added Miles Boykin from Baltimore. They got a lot, much different look in the receiver core, so interesting to see how that works. And potentially a new QB in Kenny Pickett. I hate that Kenny Pickett stays in Pitt because I wanted him to go somewhere else. Other than Pittsburgh, Igor Shesterkin is in disbelief, and the Carolina Hurricanes just won in overtime. 13 minutes, 12 seconds in.
That sucks.
Dude, Shesterkin just looked like he saw a ghost. Yeah, man.
It must be a New York theme.
Interesting. Yeah. Good connection.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's an interesting Steelers team. I don't think they did a lot on defense this offseason, which is interesting. I think they could have used some more improvement, but DeMarvin Leal could be a decent addition. I don't know. He's got some, you know, concerns, which is why he dropped in the draft. But they're a good team. I think they could edge out the Patriots, and I'm going to go with it. I think they'll beat the Patriots in a close one.
All right. I am differing from you for the first time. I have them winning this game. Again, kind of a toss-up to me for all the same reasons you mentioned. Like, again, it kind of falls into, you know, who the Patriots – are they going to be able to cover? Like you said, Johnson and Claypool. Najee Harris, obviously, we saw the Patriots struggle with pretty good running backs last season. You can never count Mike Tomlin out of a game. But then I go back to, like you said, the quarterback position. And as people know, if you listen to me, I don't trust Mitch Trubisky with anything. Now, like you said, maybe, you know, maybe they go with the rookie to start the season. Maybe they pull Mac Jones and he beats out Trubisky in training camp. But I
feel like it's going to be Mitch if I were to.
That's what I mean. I don't think you bring Mitch Trubisky in if you don't plan on playing him at least the first couple games of the season just to see if he can give you something. If not, then you go with Pickens. But
Pickett.
Thank you.
Pickett,
I knew it was
Pickens. I just made that connection. Wow.
Yeah.
Look, one quick thing about Mitch Trubisky. I think Mitch Trubisky's got something to play for.
I think you can argue that. I just, like I said, I have never been all that impressed with Mitch Trubisky, and then going up against the Patriots, like, I think I think he's the prime quarterback that Bill Belichick can make look like an idiot. Sure, he has maybe shown some stuff to people in the past, but more so than not, he's been on the bad side of things. I think Bill Belichick can exploit, you know, his, I don't know, mistakes, I guess, or his, his dumbness or anything like that. But yeah, I think this is a game the Patriots has got a back and forth game, maybe our first overtime game of the season. Maybe you have to rely on Nick Folk here. You look shocked. What's the matter?
Dude, I'm watching the replay of the goal. Ian Cole turnaround shot. It deflects off the bottom part of Ryan Lindgren's shaft, and he tipped it past.
Oh, so an own goal? Oh, no.
A former Bruin. That's rough.
Wow. Helps out the Canes.
Dude,
ouch.
I would not sleep. I would not sleep.
No, that would not be good.
Tony D'Angelo almost fell, getting up to hop over the bench. That would have been
loser.
Funny.
Yep.
Loser, douchebag, racist, asshole.
All that. But yeah, I have Pittsburgh. I have the Patriots beating Pittsburgh. So I'm 1-1 to start the year. You are 0-2. The other thing too is to spoil it. I couldn't see the Patriots going on a lengthy losing streak to start the season. As I spoil, like I said, my next pick for the Baltimore game. But they got to get a win in here somewhere. Again, I just think the odds are stacked against them going into Miami. So I feel like Pittsburgh, they've had some success there. Like Pittsburgh's the one they're going to be able to get out of this.
Yeah, I could see it, but I don't know. This is a toss-up type of game in some ways, but I don't know. I'm going with Pittsburgh. I'm going with my gut here.
Yep.
Taking it. I had Baltimore winning at first, and the Patriots finishing with a tough record. But I've changed my pick. I think this game could end in a tie, but I just really don't see the Patriots ending
that would ever suck.
Tying under Bill Belichick. I just don't think that will happen. Mm-hmm. But if I were to pick one tie game, I could see it being Baltimore, just to put that out there for fun.
Well, if Jim Harbaugh does
the win against Baltimore here.
If Harbaugh, if they get into a spot where they need to kick a field goal to win and they decide to go for, you know, a touchdown or whatever, then maybe you could see it end in a tie like Baltimore screwed themselves twice or three times last year without putting the best kicker on the planet out there. But
the big thing for me for Baltimore this year is they trade Marquise Brown and they haven't really replaced him.
Mm-hmm.
They added a lot on defense. Kyle Hamilton, Jalen Armour Davis, David Ojabo falling, Travis Jones. They could have gotten perhaps Jordan Davis instead of Travis Jones later in the draft if, you know, the Eagles didn't trade up for Jordan Davis. Who else? They got someone else. They got Marcus Williams. I was expecting him to be highlighted in green here on our lead. Marcus Williams is a nice pickup. I like what they've done, but I think the Patriots can beat him. I feel like this is another toss-up game. Tyler Linderbaum, getting him is huge. They lost Bradley Bozeman. Daniel Falele is good depth at the tackle position. They signed Slade Bolden too. So that's the maybe the one that got away for the Patriots. Drafted a couple tight ends, which is interesting. Charlie Kolar and Isaiah Likely. And they're a good team, but I don't know. I think the Patriots can edge him out here. I think if they can somehow shut down Mark Andrews to some extent, it's going to be a little tougher for guys like James Prochet II, Devin Duvernay, Tylan Wallace, and Rashad Bateman to make a lot of noise. Rashad Bateman is the biggest threat of that group to me, but he's still an unproven rookie, former first-rounder. Tylan Wallace has some ability, unproven. Devin Duvernay has some ability, unproven, and Samuel Prochet II. So their line, though, I mean, their line is underwent some change, and I think they'll be fine, but you know, they're kind of like a fringe team to me. I'm not going to guarantee them to be a playoff contender. I think the Patriots can edge them out here. And I switched my pick from an L to a W.
Yeah, that's another one I went back and forth on. I have, like I said, them losing, though. You said it. I don't think they have anyone that can stop Mark Andrews. And I don't know if, like, I'm not
–
maybe, but, like, I just don't know. And then, for some reason, I'm not a huge Lamar Jackson fan, but for some reason to me this season, like, I feel like he's got a ton to prove after a down year last year. Like, I feel like this entire season just could be one giant Lamar Jackson, like, revenge tour type of thing. So I think, again, Patriots have struggled with mobile quarterbacks. I think he's a guy that could very well, again, without a ton of weapons to throw to, could just come out and rip the Patriots apart on the ground. Exactly. So, like, they always seem to have one kind of, like, not strange loss, but like a loss you don't expect at home. Like this is the one I think early season. We've heard this from the Patriots before. The first couple weeks of the season, first month, they still kind of take as a extended, not training camp, but an extended preseason to figure some things out. So I think this game could very well fall into that. Like a loss where you're sitting there going, "Well, how the hell do the Patriots end up losing this game?" Like it's just one of those early season tilts that you feel like the Patriots should be able to get up for, but just ultimately can't.
Yeah, and I think for my case, too, I think if they lose to Pittsburgh, they're going to come out pissed off.
That's what I mean. Either way, you flip back and forth, you could see that. So I agree with you there.
Yeah, first 51 seconds, the Flames scored twice. I read that kind of quickly.
God.
I didn't read the whole thing, so I might be wrong there. But when I looked over, it was like 16:53 and the Flames were up 2-0 and they have a power play. So I don't know what the fuck is going on with the Oilers, but
what Edmonton's doing. Yeah. Falling apart.
Ice advantage. That place is bonkers banana land. So yes, I want to go to a game there if I ever end up in Calgary in playoff time very badly. Green Bay, this is an L. Like
Aaron Rodgers, absolutely. Yep.
Still around. They added some receiver help for him. Finally, Jaire Alexander is looking to be healthy. He just got paid the highest a corner has ever been paid. 4 years,
it's in Green Bay.
It's in Green Bay. It's not a win.
Everything's stacked against the Patriots in this one. Stacked against everything.
We'll see how their receiver group looks without Devontae Adams. That's going to be a big thing to monitor. But I don't know. I think Aaron Rodgers can beat the Patriots.
Absolutely. I 100% think he can beat the Patriots. Yep. Doesn't matter who's out there to throw to. Again, the Patriots don't have anybody that can cover, in my opinion, right now. Maybe Jonathan Jones if he gets back healthy, but we'll have to wait and see on that. Schedule is a massive loss coming up.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what Christian Watson and Romeo Doobes do. Or Doobes, whatever. Yeah. I still don't know how to pronounce that guy's last name.
Dubs, Doobes, whatever it is, yeah.
Daubs, Dobes.
Like dogs.
Whatever, man. Yeah, we'll see what happens in Green Bay, but I don't know. Yep. I think Aaron Rodgers wills them to win over the Patriots, especially at Lambeau. Detroit, the kneecap-biting Detroit Lions. They got a kneecap biter in the draft in Aiden Hutchinson. Jameson Williams is a huge upgrade for them. I like what the Lions have done this offseason, but they're still not a huge threat.
No, they're building towards something. Like you said, a couple nice pieces here and there. They're doing stuff exactly. I do like their head coach, whether he has some weird stuff to say or not. But yeah, I mean, on the flip side of the, you know, consensus loss of Green Bay, consensus win with Detroit, they're still not there yet, so that's good to get the Patriots at 2-3 for the both of us heading into week 6.
Yep. I mean, Aiden Hutchinson, James Williams, Josh Pascal's a nice pick. Malcolm Rodriguez, I've heard good things about, a linebacker. Kirby Joseph and Chase Lucas are good additions to the secondary as well. The Flames are up 3-0.
That game's over.
This is what happens. I'm not saying it's over for Edmonton, but you have the best player in the world. And you have a 40-year-old goalie in net.
It's horrible.
Ken Holland needs to be fired. I don't care. That guy does not deserve a job anywhere. Brutal. But yeah, the Lions just aren't good enough yet, but they're starting to build something. They got a nice receiving core now with Williams, Amon-Ra, Khalif Raymond, and Josh Reynolds, a good depth. And you had DJ Chark, who I wanted the Patriots to sign, and they got Quintez Cephas and Tom Kennedy ready to roll. Friend of Stu Finer. So,
for anybody who doesn't
know, Tom Kennedy. Mike Smith is not getting pulled, is he?
3 goals and what'd you say, God. 2 minutes in? Six minutes, have to be. Absolutely, wow. Pull the goalie.
Yeah, wow. You do something. I just didn't even think of it. Now they got the big goofy giant doofus, Mikko Koskinen, to replace him. Cleveland. We don't know for 100% facts if Deshaun Watson's going to play.
Yeah, this is a tentative.
With how things were ruled in court, that maybe he does. We don't know what's going to happen with Baker Mayfield, but if obviously Deshaun Watson is healthy, he's going to play. And if he's legally able to play, he will. Yeah, 3 goals on 9 shots for the Flames. Woof. Buzz, your Jinx. Girlfriend. Woof. Yeah, I don't know. Deshaun Watson, Cleveland. I don't like it. I don't like Nick Chubb. I don't like Kareem Hunt. I think they cause a lot of problems. I'm not saying I don't like
Kareem Hunt's a Patriots killer.
Even though Kareem Hunt is a bad person.
This is true.
I think Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt go bananas. I think Amari Cooper and Deshaun Watson go bananas. I like their defense as well. It's not.
They got Amari Cooper.
Yeah, and I like their defense. Give the Patriots some problems. I think they pull this one out at home against the Pats.
I was going to give a hot take and say if Deshaun Watson – I mean, I have this as a loss, thinking that Deshaun Watson's going to play, but I was going to say if Baker Mayfield's a quarterback, I'd put the Patriots as a win here, but with all that talent, like with all that talent on the offensive side of the ball, and if Baker Mayfield still can't figure it out with that, like, then he is a garbage quarterback. But right now, sitting here thinking that Deshaun Watson is a starting quarterback of the Browns, I'll schedule this as a loss for the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, my thing with Baker Mayfield, wherever he ends up, if it doesn't work this year, wherever he plays, it's not going to work. I'm giving Baker Mayfield one last chance. So, to you, Baker.
Do with that what you will.
Imagine if Baker Mayfield heard this, that would be hilarious.
He'd be like, I want to prove that kid wrong.
His interview with on Mike Sud's podcast is very interesting for anybody who has any interest in watching. Maybe gain some respect for Baker Mayfield. We've talked about it a little bit. Chicago at home. I mean, Justin Fields is not winning on the road against Bill Belichick. It's just not happening. He's a bad guy. Speaking of Jersey Jerry, begrudgingly takes a picture with Jersey Jerry.
Oh, yeah.
Bad guy, bad vibes. I don't know about Justin Fields, man. I don't know. You can't be doing that just because he's older. You know, you can't take a picture with him. You're too cool. I don't know. I don't like those vibes.
Scumbag move.
Not good vibes for the Bears, for Ryan Poles running the ship there, Matt Eberflus. It's bad vibes. The Patriots are just a better team, too. They're going to win. Oh, yep. Edmonton. Oh, we had a high-scoring affair. Connor McDavid is in FU mode. He's like, okay, don't want to do this whole losing thing.
Yep. Bring this team back single-handedly.
Condor McDragon.
So dumb. Can't
get enough. You also think this is a win.
I do, yep. For all the same reasons you do, I don't see Justin Fields walking into Gillette and pulling out a win in prime time against the Patriots on Monday night.
The first edition of Mac versus Justin.
Yep.
The Jets.
Fun game, but
the Jets. The Jets killed the draft. But
they did. I'll give them credit there. Yep. They are still the Jets.
They are still, in fact, the Jets. That is not up for discussion. Yep. Garrett Wilson, great pickup. I can't believe they had this good of a draft, man, on the surface. Sauce Gardner. Hate that Sauce Gardner is a Jet.
Great pickup, yep.
Breece Hall,
that stings.
Pretty good running back, and he can catch passes as well. I think he could finally be the number one back they've been looking for a few years now. Max Mitchell, good O-line depth. I like Jeremy Ruckert even at tight end. I like a lot of what they did. They even signed a guy named Zonovan, which is pretty cool. Jermaine Johnson, they traded back into the late first round to get him. He could be a stud off the edge for them right away. I like what the Jets have done, but
yep, again, they're another team that's building towards something. Yep, exactly.
Garrett Wilson, I kind of went back and forth between him and Jameson Williams being my favorite receivers in the draft. They would have to really mess this up for Garrett Wilson not to be a surefire stud. I think he's just awesome, and you know, we'll see what happens in his rookie year. But it's a win against the Jets. It's a win even on the road, 4-4.
Yep.
Indy, Matt Ryan and the Indianapolis Colts. It's an L for the Patriots, but it will be a close game, I think.
I think so. Again, I kind of went back and forth, but then I remembered you lost to the Colts with Carson Wentz. They upgrade maybe to some, depending on what people think of Matt Ryan. Yeah. So I count it as an upgrade. Matt Ryan's going to get his revenge on the Patriots, and I think they walk into Gillette and the Colts once again. Plus, again, if Jonathan Taylor's healthy, maybe he has a step down from last season. But again, like, it's a premier superstar running back. The Patriots always tend to struggle with them. He lit them up last year. Yep. He's probably going to do it again. So another loss on the board for the Patriots.
Yep. They had Philip Lindsay. Actually, I think that was today.
Yeah, I did. That's right. I did see that today. Very nice back depth.
He's good depth at this point in his career. Alec Pierce in the draft could be a good weapon for Matt Ryan. They get Bernhard Raimann for some tackle depth. Jelani Woods, who had an amazing combine for a tight end. Jack Doyle retires. They replace him with Jelani Woods. They got him and Wiley Cox. I like Jelani Woods to give them some sneaky value. And yeah, I mean, they're just a good team to begin with. They just added some pieces. They added Stephon Gilmore.
Oh, that's right. I forgot they did. Yeah, that's a great pickup for them, too. Excuse me.
I like J.J. Doman, the linebacker they drafted. I've heard good things about him as well. So that's a nice, good pickup as I'm looking through the depth chart to give myself some reminders here. But, yeah, I mean, Steph, they had a good thing going with how their secondary was being built and put together. Bobby Okereke could have another, you know, building on, like, a type of breakout start to his career. So I'm looking for that. Could cause some problems for the Patriots, but Stephon Gilmore, Kenny Moore is good. Kyrie Willis is good at times. Yeah, I don't know. I like the team. I like them enough to beat the Patriots.
Yep.
Is what I'm getting at as I just kind of ramble here. 4-5 into the bye. Not great, but yeah. I mean, like,
could be worse.
Yeah. My worst case scenario for the Patriots this year is 5-12. I'm just going to put that out there.
Okay.
You get the Jets again. We get Jets for the second time in 3 weeks. It's a win again, 5-5. I don't need to explain the Jets
again. Yeah, I mean, I really, again, I was trying, like, I'm not going to spoil what my win-loss prediction is, but, like, I was trying to figure out a way to like make this work. Not that I want to, but like I feel like there's a ticky tack loss in there somewhere. Like I really debated having the Patriots split with every not every division opponent, but like it was a part of me that was like, maybe this is the year the Jets figure something out. They get lucky, they steal one, but I couldn't bring myself to do it, especially not at home coming off a bye. Like Patriots win that one going away 5-5, as you have them as well.
Yeah. It's they're still the Jets until they prove otherwise.
Exactly. They'll find a way to, you know, Jets the game up somehow, more so than not.
Yeah. Minnesota kind of went back and forth in this one, mainly due to the receivers, but it's Kirk Cousins. I think they can beat him.
Exactly.
Please just don't let Dalvin Cook go ridiculous on you, too.
Yep, that'll be the one really big thing to worry about. Plus, I don't think all that highly of Minnesota's defense, so.
Yeah. Like, Alexander Mattison can contribute. They drafted Ty Chandler out of North Carolina, who can be a decent change of pace back, I think, as a rookie for them. What did they do in the draft as I refresh myself? Louis C. and Andrew Booth Jr.
Right. They were the one that got Booth. Yep.
I don't like stings. That. And they needed upgrades. They needed upgrades. Pat Peterson isn't going to be around for long. Harrison Smith isn't going to be around for much longer. Cam Dantzler hasn't really lived up to expectations early in his career, but has had moments, I guess. They're building something in the secondary. It's not perfect yet, but I don't know. I think they're starting to build something, but the Patriots can beat Kirk Cousins.
Yep.
Bill Belichick can beat Kirk Cousins.
He's another one like Trubisky. Like you big thing for me. Make him look bad. Yep. The other thing too is just please don't ruin my Thanksgiving. Like it's kind of a nice thing to see the Patriots playing on Thanksgiving night, the first of four straight primetime games, which is kind of interesting. Don't ruin my Thanksgiving. Don't come out and lay like an egg Thanksgiving night. Like if this was like the 1 o'clock game, I wouldn't feel as bad. But like after like eating and everything that like I want to sit down and watch a football game that I'm actually invested in because my team's involved in it. Don't F up the day for me, please.
I don't even know if the Patriots have ever played on Thanksgiving in our lifetime.
There was one. I think so. They might have played the Lions 1 year. Maybe.
Hardly remember.
I have to go back and look that up, but I'm pretty sure there was 1 year they played. Maybe it was Tennessee, maybe? I could have sworn it was somebody they played before. I'll have to look that up at some point and get back to you.
Yeah. Thursday night, week 13, Buffalo Bills. They're not beating the Bills this year.
No. Nope.
I don't know if the Bills are my early pick to win the Super Bowl, but Josh Allen's my early pick to win MVP. It's an L. They're not beating the Bills. The Bills are nasty. They managed to even get better.
I don't think they have a chance of just flat out competing with the Bills, let alone beating them. Like,
they really don't.
You're looking at like playoff performance like you had last year, like twice this year, I think. I think Buffalo blows the Patriots out in both games.
It's possible. Cole Beasley, not around anymore. They draft Khalil Shakir out of Boise State. Could have been an option for the Patriots. They bring in Jameson Crowder.
Nope.
Gabriel Davis could be. Looking at a breakout season a little bit, maybe Isaiah McKenzie. I like their receiver group. I like them adding James Cook. Zach Moss is just not cutting it. I could see him being cut. They added Duke Johnson as well. You know, he could just be competition. James Cook, I forget, brother or cousin of Dalvin Cook.
I think it's Georgia, brother, yeah.
Could take over the starting job early on, even from Devin Singletary, I think. But I think Singletary and Cook will get the majority of the carries. I like the pickup for the Bills. And Kyir Elam, another guy the Patriots could have had.
Yep.
They needed a corner to, you know, help take some pressure off of Tre'Davious White. They got it. So yeah. The Patriots did it. Not happy about that, but the Bills are gonna be really good. They got punt god Matt Areza.
For a team that doesn't punt, it's a strange move, but
doesn't punt, and they already have Matt Hawk. Matt Hawk.
Yep.
I just screamed. I hope I didn't. Well, I kind of screamed. I hope I didn't wake my parents up. that'd be pretty funny, but not funny because my dad would be pissed. But whatever. I just thought he was saying Hawk really loud. Sorry, guys.
Fair enough. On to week 14 versus Arizona. 14. At Arizona. And you and I differ again on this one.
I'm going the L route.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what DeAndre Hopkins' status is. You know, if he's healthy, you know, he'll be back from the suspension. But Guy struggles with health problems.
Is Kyler Murray that guy? We don't know.
I don't know. He kind of
will he have won out by Arizona? Yeah. Well, that was my big thing is I wanted to, like, again, I couldn't bring myself to have the Patriots go on a lengthy losing streak. So I needed to figure out a win in these, you know, four games coming up. This is the time of year Arizona tends to craft themselves late in the season. So, like, if Arizona's – I'm assuming Arizona's going to be favored in this game unless the Patriots have some sort of ridiculous start to the season. Very well could be a game where Arizona comes out and maybe treats this as like a trap game, and I think they take a loss here. I think the Patriots get a win on primetime in this little stretch they're on, maybe show some people something, maybe give us some hope that they can make a late season push with our records not looking the greatest right now, but – I don't know. It's going to be tough to finish out the season, but I have some faith they maybe pull a fast one at everybody and beat Arizona.
At this point, I expected N'Keal Harry to be a member of this team.
Yeah.
But, you know, they didn't do the Andy Isabella thing.
Mm-hmm.
Marquise Brown is an Arizona Cardinal.
Yep. Solid pickup for them.
Gives them a legit tight end outside of Zach Ertz. And, you know, mm-hmm. before Zach Ertz, they didn't really have one. Max Williams isn't the guy. He's fine, but. You know, Zach Ertz isn't going to be around like super long term. Trey McBride's a good pickup at tight end. I like that. Wasn't expecting Keontae Ingram to be the addition at running back. I thought they would take one earlier, but looks like James Conner, Eno Benjamin, and Keontae Ingram. So that'll be interesting to see how their running game looks. Myjai Sanders and Cameron Thomas are nice pickups on defense for them in the draft, like those. And I thought there was one more, but there wasn't. As I'm checking their OLEDs page just to refresh myself on names. Yeah, Arizona's good. You know, they didn't get like overwhelmingly better or anything, but they're still a good team. As much as we can say, oh, they faltered around this time last year, we don't know what to expect. I think they're good enough to beat the Patriots. And I'm going with them doing so, unfortunately, here.
All right, so we have flip-flops records. I have them sitting at 7-6. You have them sitting at 6-7, heading into a maybe not before the offseason started, you know, a matchup that would have caught some people's eyes, but with the Las Vegas Raiders and with Josh McDaniels being there, an interesting week 15 matchup. You and I, spoiler alert, do not have going well for the Patriots.
Nope. Davante Adams.
Yep. That is going to be the difference maker. And again, we don't know if the Patriots have anyone who can cover.
Derek Carr is good enough to get the ball to Davante Adams, and I think Davante Adams could single-handedly win them this game.
I just like the Josh McDaniels factor. I think he is going to come out and say, you know, second chance at a head coaching job is going to, you know, be able to prove something, obviously. There's a lot of talk of that team, as much as they've done in the offseason, still maybe being the fourth best team in that division, which is crazy. They were a playoff team last year. I think, you know, he might have a chip on his shoulder and that whole team might, and they're going to be able to prove something. So I think they might surprise the Patriots in this one. Like, could the Patriots pull it out? Maybe, but I don't know. Like you said, I think I'm with you. I think Davante Adams could single-handedly just rip the Patriots to shreds in this game, which he very well might do.
He could. Their RLADS page, I hope for their sake they don't do this, has Jermaine Illuminor listed as a starting left guard, and they drafted two guards. And Dylan
Parham, if that's the case, the Patriots might win then. Just attack that matchup.
Dylan Parham and Theron Munford Jr., I like both of those guys a lot. They would be stupid to not put one of them at starting left guard or right guard over Jermaine Illuminor. Jermaine Illuminor is very bad.
As we know, yep.
But they got a much different receiver core this year, man. They get Davante Adams. They bring in DeMarcus Robinson, a guy kind of like,
it's a good third option.
Looking to find his role, and Casey never really did it consistently. Keelan Cole, they signed him recently. He could be good depth.
It's a solid pickup.
Interesting.
Still have Hunter Renfro.
If he can stay healthy, struggle with health problems, could be a legit stud through a full season. Foster Moreau is good. They got Jacob Hollister. They got a lot of former Patriots. They got Jakob Johnson. They got Brandon Bolden. Jarrett Stidham now.
That's true, yeah. Jarrett
Stidham.
Good on Josh McDaniels going from a place where he really didn't have a whole lot of weapons to throw to a shit ton of them out in Vegas.
Yeah, Jarrett Stidham goes along with a seventh round pick to the Raiders for a sixth. So the Patriots have 6-6-6. They have three.
Oh, God.
Cursed season.
Yeah.
My underrated addition for the Raiders is Zamir White, the running back they drafted. Mm-hmm. They did not pick up the fifth year option on Josh Jacobs, somewhat surprisingly.
Yeah, I was surprised by that.
They're super long term. I wanted to get to Zamir White in my dynasty draft, but I couldn't. I think Zamir White could be a legit impact player pretty early on. So that's a name to watch, I'd say. I like their team. I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender, but I like their team.
They got a solid team, yep.
Junior in the draft, which is fine. They didn't do a whole lot exciting on defense, though, which is a problem because their defense is not very good. But luckily for them, they did sign Chandler Jones early in the offseason in free agency. So that helps.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for more from, you know, build seasons to build on from the new guy. They got in a trade, Rock Ya-Sin in the secondary, Trayvon Mayrig, and Jonathan Abram. So they'll be dependent on that. They have Jerron Harmon, too. I just remembered that because I
forgot about that. Yep.
Cravon LeBlanc, Jerron Harmon, two more former Patriots. And Tyree Gillespie. I like Tyree Gillespie, too. So we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I do not think the Patriots are going to win that game.
I do not either.
Speaking of games they're not going to win, Cincinnati.
The defending AFC champions. Loss.
Cincinnati got a lot better.
They finally figured out that they wanted to actually protect Joe Burrow. How about that?
Crazy concept. He was
I know, right?
Full Send podcast they dropped today talking about stuff. So worth a listen. Love Joe Burrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're going to be really good. Again, Alex Kappa. Lyle Collins, arguably the best right tackle in the league, and Ted Karras.
Teddy Karras is there.
They got legit help for him. And
yep.
The thought of Joe Burrow with significantly more help is terrifying. My second MVP pick would be him behind Josh Allen.
I think that'd be a great pick. That's what I mean. You get all that help and more time to throw to all those weapons. Dude. Plus, they still have Joe Mixon. If he can stay healthy. Like, I like their tight end, Ozuma, not the flashiest name. Is he gone? No, he's with the Jets, right? Who do they have a tight end now? They added somebody, didn't they?
Hayden Hurst.
That's right, okay.
He's more of a blocker.
Absolutely. Evans wrong, but.
To break out in the running game as well. I think that guy's got some low-key upside. They signed him last year or drafted him late, I don't remember. But I've heard good things about that Chris Evans kid, so watch out for him in the running game maybe.
Cincinnati's just a team too. Like that's a team. Well, we talked all about last year with the Patriots. If you get down, you're not going to be able to keep up with them. Like Cincinnati is a team that can just blow you out of the building. You're not going to be able to win a shootout with them. So,
no, you will not be able to. I just discovered that they have a guy named Tariqius Tisdale. So that's cool.
All right,
it's a cool name.
Hell of a name.
Dax Hill. Love Dax Hill. Would have loved him on the Patriots. Let me tell you. Cam Taylor-Britt. I've heard good things about him. He could be a good piece of their secondary. And Tyson Anderson. They needed to add secondary depth. They did it. They needed to add O-line depth. They did it. For some reason, brought back Eli Apple early in the offseason. They did that.
Bad move.
They kept Trey Flowers around after claiming him on waivers. I really like this Bengals team, and I think they will potentially smoke the Patriots by 20 points. So
would not surprise me.
But
really wouldn't.
The season, maybe the Patriots keep it close. They dig deep and bury down. But I have the Patriots falling to 6-9.
Nice. Four straight losses. That's a big ouch right there.
I, at one point, had four straight losses.
I said I couldn't bring myself to do it. I wanted to. I'm very down on this team this year, but I just, for some reason, maybe that'll change as training camp gets closer and we see more preseason action on what these teams actually are. But as of right now, I'm holding out a little bit of hope with how the schedule is set up.
Mm-hmm. That's all we can do.
Does your four-week losing streak end, though, in Week 17 versus Miami?
Yes, it does. All right. It does. I think they beat Miami once.
Yep, I think you split with Miami, absolutely. And I have more faith.
More.
Yep, I have more faith at home than I do on the road. It's just track record. It's a given. Patriots figure something out late in the season. And then get a nice little test against the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo to end the season. Who knows when this game will be played? Who knows what time it will be played at? Because this is a to be determined both on the, time and the actual date of the game. Wherever they play it, whenever they play it, do they get a win in this game?
No.
I don't think so either. Like I said, this is blowout. Just both games. Patriots are not going to stand a chance.
Yep.
It would not be a surprise to me if between the two games, they lose both games by a combined 40 points. I fully expect two touchdown, three touchdown losses coming against the Bills this year. Cause Unless you have some sort of weird ass weather game like you had last year.
Like, yeah, can you imagine?
Not going to be great. So,
one,
both
six,
of us.
11, I have them finishing 7 and 10.
Yep. I have 8 and 9, but like I said, that is a tentative. Want to drop that 8 down, but right now, as we do, like we said, the way too early predictions, I'm holding out hope that there's something to cling on to for this Patriots team this season. Maybe they surprise you here and there, but it's not looking all that great as we sit here right now with this team.
Nope, it's not.
To be expected, though, with the offseason they had, as we've talked about in the offseason as a whole and the offseason all these other teams have had. And like, for a bright spot, I did see, I think it was the NFL, they tweeted out the rankings of strength of schedule. Patriots fall kind of right in the middle of that list. I think they're at 15. So maybe that gives you more hope that they can pull some of these games out. I don't know if maybe that gives you less hope for some people, but we'll see. We're kind of in wait and see mode with the Patriots right now.
Alberta getting super battle bound, battle-y. Milan Lucic going crazy maniac mode on Evander Kane. He wants that. Oh,
it's two tough customers right there.
This series is going to be the best. Brett Ritchie wants a piece of Leon Draisaitl. Holy Macalandy. I'm going to wake my parents up again. Oh, man, Lucic and Evander Kane. I would love to see him kick the shit.
That'd be a hell of a fight. Kane.
Oh, my God. What did you think of that whole thing with Evander Kane at the end of the or towards the end of Game 7?
I didn't see it. What did he do?
Because he put up the 7 after he scored.
People didn't know
if he meant they're going to Game 7 because it was in Game 6, or he meant because he has 7 goals.
Maybe.
They debunked the fact that he was – whoa, Lucic. Lucic is getting kicked out. He's like shooing someone off like this. Who is he talking to? Trevor Lewis goes up against McDavid. McDavid's battling. Lucic buries McDavid.
Oh, my Jesus God. Christ.
This is awesome. Oh, I want to see. I like McDavid. I do. But I'd love to see Lucic just bury him all series. And credit to the Oilers, man. They got on Lucic quick.
Did they? That's good. No, you have to if someone's going – not going after, but if someone's getting at the best player in hockey.
Lucic is the man. Like, be the heartbeat of this series, Lucic. I'm not going to stop the big guy. God, I love him. He's the fucking man. Wow, that got interesting quick. Apparently Kane didn't mean, like, oh, like, we're going to Game 7, because they showed on the bench, like, McDavid was not happy with Evander Kane. Like, he was.
Oh, no, I did see that. I saw the McDavid reaction.
Separated on the bench, like McDavid.
I saw the McDavid reaction. I didn't know what it was.
Kane was kind of alone on the bench.
Yeah, what it was referring to. Okay.
Yeah, that was interesting. But, the energy level just got cranked up a little bit. Blake Coleman, if he wasn't careful enough, would have just buried Mikko Koskinen, which would have been crazy. But, I got to watch this hit again. God, what a great shoulder-to-shoulder hit. Yeah, Darnell Nurse is right in there. Even McDavid got up and grabbed Lucic a bit. Kane's in there. Richie's in there. I think I saw Oliver Shillington maybe. Yeah, I mean.
Speaking of energy, it's funny you said the energy shifting thing. One thing about the Celtics as we wrap it up here, I forgot to mention or ask you. I don't know if you saw it, but Bam Adebayo had an interesting comment last night after the game. They asked him about what happened between the first and second half, and he gave – I think the way he worded it was there was a shift in energy or an energy shift, very similar to the Jaylen Brown tweet that you like to reference. And NBC Sports Boston kind of tweeted out the video of Bam Adebayo with
you don't know that
eyebrow emoji. So everyone was like, is he referring to the Jaylen Brown thing? Or is I kind of took it as just like, well, yeah, the energy did shift. Like they came out and were more aggressive, but a lot of people, I think, took it as like, he's kind of coming at Jaylen Brown there. Let's see if he can respond now.
That game is the L word. I'm putting the L word on it.
I think it's going to happen. It has to.
I'm putting the L word on it.
All right. Someone's going to need to do it. Celtics going to need that. So
it's going to happen.
We will see.
But that's going to wrap it up. We're like just at 3 hours, I think, right on the dot almost. I don't know what the pause did. I don't know if the pause is going to.
Oh, it's right. It's been so long. I forgot back that even happened.
That would really suck. That would really make me sad. But I don't think it will because it didn't end the recording. But we'll see what happens. We'll get it up there. Thank you for listening. You can listen wherever you find your podcast. I always forget to look at iHeartRadio and Amazon, so you can check that out. Maybe you'll find us there if you listen there. You can find us follow the Full Press Coverage Twitch and YouTube. Give us a rating wherever you want to, wherever you can. The listenership continues to be awesome, so thank you for that. Follow us on TikTok, Swadron and Craddy. Haven't posted in a while, but we will eventually. You never know with us on TikTok. You just don't. But sure. Maybe I'll try and get some clips up there or something. Finally, again, but you can follow us on Twitter, me at @Mike_Craddy, Ryan at @Ryan_Salvaggio, and the show at @SalandCraddyPod. Remember, if you're friends with either of us on Facebook, you can even watch on Facebook. We got so many options for you guys, you know, because we just want the listeners to be able to listen.
So much. So many platforms.
We love our audience. You know, mm-hmm. We're just here for you guys.
Yep.
Yeah, but, you know, stay safe, stay healthy, be nice to people, all that good stuff, and enjoy the Stanley Cup playoffs, enjoy the Celtics, and enjoy life. Deuces.
Adios.
Adios.